I'm sort of stealing this idea from Jaden Animations.
Wait, no, that's not right. I'm not stealing it. I'm plagiarizing it.
Jaden did a video talking about random thoughts she had, and you should all go watch it. And I thought, hey, I think randomly sometimes. So Jaden, is it alright if I make a video about my random thoughts? I hope you say yes, because I just did. What is happiness? Well, it's a chemical in your brain. And how do you get that chemical? Well, it's just a little something I like to call drugs. I think humans make fun of hairless animals way too much. We think that all hairless animals are ugly. Just go to Google Images and type in hairless animal, and you'll probably think the animals you see there are ugly as well. But we all seem to forget that we're hairless animals too. If anything, other animals should think that we're ugly. So I look at this phenomenon and I have a theory. I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry. My dad never taught me how to shave, and one time I cut myself shaving right above my lip, and for the rest of the day, all I could smell was blood. I don't know why I mentioned the dad part. You know how websites will ask you to type in a bunch of misshapen letters to make sure you're not a robot? That's called a CAPTCHA. And some of those CAPTCHAs are impossible. Sometimes I look at a CAPTCHA and think, am I a robot? I just wanted to send some email. I didn't want to question my identity. I wasn't ready for an existential crisis, Club Penguin. Sorry, that joke is dead. Just like Club Penguin. So here's the random thought. What if we lived in a robot society and robots had to prove that they weren't human to make a Facebook account? I think their CAPTCHA would be an optical illusion. Like, to sign into a website, it'll show two lines and say, prove you're not a human, which line is bigger? Optical illusions are like CAPTCHAs for people. Every time you paint a room, it gets a little bit smaller. And if it takes you one can of paint to paint an entire room, then the room gets smaller by one can of paint. You brought a can of paint inside the room, and you never took it out. Every time you smell something, molecules from that thing get sucked up into your nose, and that's how you're able to smell it. So that means every time you smell something, it gets a tiny bit lighter. Do archaeologists have lingo and jokes that only other archaeologists will understand? Like, there's a whole other world of jokes that I won't get to experience because I'm not an archaeologist. Like, one day, two archaeologists could be digging a hole, and one says, I'm not finding anything! And then the other guy says, well, you know what they say in the archaeology business. And I don't know what they say because I'm not an archaeologist. How about we look up jokes for archaeologists? Why did Robin Hood pull out of the archery contest? He found it an arrowing experience. Okay, get that one? It just wasn't that funny. Nor was it about archaeology. Or maybe it was, and I just don't get it. We'll never know. Where did Caesar keep his armies? Up his sleeveys. Okay, I had to get this one explained to me, but armies is supposed to be your arm, like your body arm, and your armies go up your sleeveys. Get it? Except Julius Caesar wore a toga, so he didn't even have sleeves. And you could just say this about anyone who had an army. Where did Hitler keep his armies? Up his sleeveys! Ha ha ha! When you ask someone what time it is, sometimes they'll say, it's a quarter to blank. And first off, I really hate that way of telling time, because now I have to use math just to know what time it is. Someone will say, it's a quarter to eight. Okay, so a quarter to eight, well, a quarter is 25, so 8 minus 25, it's like negative 13. Wait, no, we're using time numbers, so a quarter of 60, that's like 10 minutes, so 8 minus 60 over 4, you carry the 2, and... Oh, it's 8 o'clock now. We usually only say it's a quarter to when referring to whole numbers, but I wish people would use other times, like, hey, what time is it? Oh, it's a quarter to 8:37. Did you know that mosquitoes prefer type O blood more than any other blood type? Does that mean our blood tastes different? How can mosquitoes sense what blood type we are? Do mosquitoes think we come in different flavors? What if there was a restaurant for mosquitoes and the menus just had our blood types? Are there mosquito snobs? Like one mosquito would say, oh, I see you're drinking O negative. Of course you'd like that blood. Everyone likes that blood. I got that whole idea from a conversation I had with Jaden, and I said I was going to use it in my random thoughts video, so I'm just stealing everything from Jaden. You know what I think would be a funny contradiction? A fedora with a Tumblr logo on it. Whenever you leave for a trip, people will say, drive safe, which is fine. I always appreciate safe driving tips, but when you go flying in an airplane, sometimes people will say, have a safe flight. But I literally have no control if the plane flies safely or not. Why are you telling me to fly safe? I should be the one telling the pilot that. Hey, I just wanted to say that a lot of my friends are counting on you, so you better not screw this up. I appreciate the sentiment, but how do I fly unsafe? Maybe go on my phone before we take off, not watch the safety video? Blow the plane up? Why do people care so much about fashion? If I bought some really nice clothes and I go to a party, out of everyone in that room, I'm the only one who can't see what I'm wearing. Unless I look down the entire time. I can go to a party and be wearing just a bunch of clown makeup, and as long as there's no mirrors around and everyone plays it cool, I would have no idea that I'm wearing anything. And also, it doesn't matter what I'm wearing, because I look good in everything. I think this whole YouTube thing has given me a confidence boost. I wouldn't say it's an unhealthy amount, but it's given me confidence that I didn't have in high school. My parents bought me a Pokemon shirt for Christmas, and yeah, I like Pokemon, but I don't want the whole world to know that. And in high school, I wouldn't have worn any remotely geeky shirt. But now, I can go outside and not even realize that I'm wearing my Pokemon shirt. And when I do realize, I usually think, huh, that's embarrassing. Ah, I'm the odd ones out, who cares? When my parents were my age, they already had a child. And here I am, wearing a Pokemon shirt. You know how different states in America will have different names for certain things? Like some states call it pop instead of soda, or how they call it a washroom instead of a bathroom, and apparently in Rhode Island they call a water fountain a bubbler, and everywhere else is just normal. Anyway, once I heard that down south, there's a phrase for when it's raining and the sun is still out. And that phrase is, the devil meeting his wife. Oh, isn't that so sweet? That means anyone can find happiness, even the devil. I love it when we give the devil more innocent and human characteristics. And given how few of times it rains in Arizona, I don't get to use that phrase very often. So already when it's raining, it's like, woo, it's raining! This day is gonna be great! But then when the sun's out, I get to say, look guys, the devil's meeting his wife! I hope they're happy together. Unfortunately, I misheard what that phrase was when I learned it. It's not the devil meeting his wife, it's actually the devil beating his wife. So I guess they're not happy together. I was so sad when I learned what it actually was. I don't know who this devil's wife is, but you need to find a new man, dude. And to think, I almost thought of you as an alright guy, Satan. I looked up that saying on Wikipedia, and in Tennessee they say, the devil is kissing his wife. So I guess in Tennessee, the devil's romantic, but everywhere else he just can't stand her. And the worst variation I could find has to be what they say in France. In France, when it rains and the sun's out, they say, the devil is beating his wife and marrying his daughter. Whoa, France! I'd expect that sort of behavior from Tennessee, but not you, France! Why do you have to be so dramatic to describe your weather? I don't want to even know what you call snowstorms. So anyway, those were my random thoughts. I swear I don't do drugs.
Hey there, Frederick. What you doing? Oh, hello, brother of mine. Why, I'm just studying for a math test tomorrow. That's pretty neat, Frederick. Braxton, brother, shouldn't you also be studying for the test? Well, you see, Frederick, due to my high levels of apathy and the stress of knowing that I'll never be good at math, I've decided to completely give up on even trying to do good on the test.
So, what are you gonna do instead?
Oh, I'm just gonna go watch some YouTube videos.
School sucks! Especially math! Ugh!
When will I ever use geometry / trigonometry / calculus in the real world?
I think you're only saying that because you're bad at geometry / trigonometry / calculus. Why is everyone so quick to hate on math? Math is easy. How many essays did you have to write for math class? Oh, that's right. E to the I pi plus 1. Which is 0. One thing I would change about math class is I think it's dumb that you have to show your work. Ugh! Do you know how much harder it is to cheat when you have to show your work? Dear math, solve your own problems, tweeted MatPat. I hate Matt, replied Protato Gamer. Hey, that's not very nice of you, Prote. All he did was tweet about math. Maybe what you really hate is spelling. Or maybe you really do hate MatPat. Well, two can play at this game. When will I ever need to know about the themes and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird when I go into the real world? That's right, never! You don't need to know anything to be in the real world.
Okay, I think we can all agree that a lot of what school teaches you isn't that important. And there's definitely more important things schools could be teaching you, like taxes or how to pick a good president. But I'm not the one who makes the curriculum, so why am I even talking about it? Regardless of how broken your education system is, you should always stay in school, kids. Right, Dave?
I was a good student in school, not counting college. And look how I turned out. I'm not using everything I learned in school almost every day. Sure, you'll probably never need to know that much about Shakespeare's plays. But hey, now you know how to read old-timey complicated books. And no, you'll probably never have to find the area under a curve ever. But now you can say that you can. And isn't that what life's all about? So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my school stories.
What do you mean Jaden already made a video on school stories? Did she call them school stories? I already stole from her like 2 videos ago. Okay, just
I'll think of something. So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my Academy anecdotes. So you know how guys can pee standing up? It's amazing. Ladies, if you've never peed standing up, then you're missing out. But there are some rules that apply with having the superpower. Like, don't go to a urinal right next to another guy unless it's absolutely necessary. Or, if the urinals don't have a divider, then everyone can all agree to keep your eyes and mind straight. These rules have been taught to us at a very young age. By the time we were in elementary school, we were all pros at peeing. Except for some of us when we were asleep, but that's not important. So at this point in life, we all should have known what we were doing. But there was this one kid who I guess no one ever taught him how to pee correctly. This kid, I'm not going to say his race because it doesn't matter, but when he went to the bathroom, he would pull his pants and underwear all the way down to the ground. Some of the ladies watching this might be thinking, wait, is that not how guys pee? Ladies, you'll just have to trust me on this, but that is the most wrong way a person can pee. The first time I saw the kid doing this was when I was in the urinal right next to him. Pee faster! As us two bros were peeing, a third bro walked into the bathroom, saw this kid's bottom, and just went, ooh, and walked out of the bathroom. I wish I could have done the same. How do you tell someone, hey man, when you pee like that, everyone can see your butt, so just... Here, let me show you how to do it. I don't know what happened to that kid, but I think he would agree with me that math is easy. He was Asian. When I was little, I had a very weird sense of humor. So in the fifth grade, there was this girl I'd known for a long time. We weren't strangers or anything. And one day I said to her, "You have two big blue zits right there." And I pointed at her eyes. I was talking about her eyes. I called her eyes zits. Get it? She, immediately slapped me. Probably because the joke was so awful. And that was the first time I ever got slapped by someone who wasn't a family member. And yes, it was Priscilla, the girl I sat next to in the cardboard boat video. She claims that the slap was an accident and that she was just trying to fake slap me to scare me. But I think she was really just self-conscious about her eyesits. One time, my sixth grade teacher, who was the same height as all of us, threw a stapler across the room because we wouldn't stop talking. Here's an anecdote about the first time I got detention, and it isn't that exciting. I was in the 7th grade and our class was at a computer lab, and the kid sitting next to me, his race doesn't matter so I'm not going to say it, Asian, kept changing the computer wallpapers to cats and he kept showing me. To be fair, I thought what he was doing was hilarious. Then I asked him, "Can you change the background to Chuck Norris?" That just goes to show you how long ago this story took place. He showed me what he did, I laughed, but then the teacher said, "Who's changing the wallpapers?" She was able to see everyone's screens from her computer, and the kid said, "Me and James were." Dude, don't bring me into this! You were the one changing the wallpapers! I mean, I was involved a little, but don't drag me down with you! We ended up getting detention, except my school didn't call it detention, they called it CARE, which I'm sure was an acronym for something. If it wasn't an acronym, that would have been a weird thing to call detention. Let's just say it stood for... Kids are really extra. The whole time I was in CARE, I kept thinking in my head, "Don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. If they see you cry, you might as well move to China." And that was the only time I got detention. Except it wasn't called detention. So I still have a clean record. Alright, here's the last anecdote. This one happened when I was in the 11th grade. I was in an AP US history class, and I had it for a 0 hour. So that meant I was at the class before school even started, and I was way too tired to learn about presidents. I was sitting in class when all of a sudden I sneezed very loudly. And it was an above average sneeze. Like one of those sneezes where you had to lean into it. And after I sneezed, this kid near me said, "Hey yo, Mr. Teacher, can we get some tissues? This boy's got a bloody nose." And I thought, oh shoot, I do? Well, that sneeze was pretty violent, and I did pick my nose a few minutes ago. And then the teacher looked right at me and said, "Oh yeah, you can just go to the bathroom." So I got up, and as I was walking to the door, I felt my face and realized, wait a minute, I don't have a bloody nose. I turned around, and there was a kid who actually did have a bloody nose walking towards me. I'm not gonna say the race of the kid because it doesn't matter. Canadian, but I was in a pretty awkward situation. So I punched myself until I actually did get a bloody nose. Nah, I'm just kidding. What I really did was I said out loud, "I have to go to the bathroom too." And then I left. I didn't really have to go to the bathroom. I didn't want to see another exposed butt anyway, so I just waited outside awkwardly for a long time. I got an A in that class, by the way, if you were wondering. I still don't use anything I learned in that class.
At my Subway, you would spend your entire 5 to 6 hour work shift with only one other person. And you didn't get to pick that peculiar partner you were spending your precious period with. So that meant I was stuck with some crazy characters. And one of those characters was really, really into that new age snorting healing crystals kind of stuff. And he would specifically talk to me about it because I was the only other person there and all we could do for fun was watching Bread Rise. Since I was contractually obligated to stay, I would just listen to him ramble about how he thought the universe worked. He told me about chakras and how easy it was to open your third eye through LSD. He told me about scrying using black mirrors and that it's a common misconception that you can get stuck in the mirror, but that's just a myth. That doesn't actually happen. Which is a good thing, because getting stuck in a mirror is something I'm constantly worried about as an adult. Oh, and he told me that every illness is in your head and that hospitals can already cure anything, but they're not going to because if they cure you, they're going to lose a customer. So he's just going to stick to his essential oils and non-vaccinated immune system, thank you very much. Listen, you can believe whatever you want to believe, as long as it's not hurting yourself or others, okay? But denying modern medicine? No! No! No, you can't! Do that! No! Since there were still 4 hours of the workday left and I didn't want to argue with him, I would just respond with, uh-huh. He didn't do crack, or meth, or any hard drugs that I know of that would alter his perception of reality. Even though he didn't trust hospitals or doctors, he really believed in the benefits of medical marijuana. If you're ever wondering what kind of person is making your sandwiches, yes, they did give this guy a license to touch your food.
Whoa, dude. My sandwich tastes like colors.
I learned something about myself that day, and that is, I'm obsessed with crazy people. Even though I didn't believe a word he said, I would still ask him questions just to get him talking. Wait, so you're telling me that everything in Naruto is real? Something about talking to him and hearing his perspective was fascinating. This human that I share a planet with exists. What is a crazy person? A crazy person is not someone who has a weird hobby or owns a pet snake. A crazy person is someone who, despite having an astronomical amount of evidence pointing to one idea, believes in the latter. I'm not a psychologist, and maybe I should have consulted one before making this video, but I think crazy people have an unhealthy amount of unchecked distrust and paranoia. I don't know where to even begin talking to crazy people. Their worldview is just so much different than mine. A crazy person will think that someone who has no reason to is lying. NASA's lying about the moon landing. I don't trust NASA. Hospitals are lying about medicine. I don't trust doctors. The government's lying about... well, a lot of things. They're lizard people! Okay, that one might be true. Thankfully, I don't personally know any crazy people. Well, okay, some of my friends are into astrology, but they still get vaccinated, so... you know, you win some, you lose some. However, on the internet, there's an overwhelming abundance of crazy people. I'm guessing crazy people don't go outside because they think the government will target them with directed energy weapons or something. Yeah, only crazy people stay inside wasting hours of their life behind computer screens. One of my guilty pleasures is that while I'm working, I will listen to crazy people talk for hours. It's weirdly my version of ASMR. I've tried listening to podcasts and audiobooks or anything that's good for my brain, but there's something so fascinating about listening to a 50-year-old genuinely tell you about his alien abduction. And it only has 300 views? This man was contacted by aliens, people! Why isn't he on the cover of Time magazine? YouTube will teach you everything you need to know about aliens. Did you know that aliens traveled millions of light years to build pyramids, stomp on our corn, and abduct a couple of crackpots? There's videos of people who will tell you in full confidence about the gray and praying mantis aliens living among us. I mean, the videos barely have any views, but they exist. Most of the views are from me. Okay, all of them. I don't understand how people think the moon landing was faked. There is so much evidence proving that the moon isn't even real. Wake up, sheeple! I gotta be honest, I don't think flat earthers are real. I think they're all just a bunch of trolls trying to get people like me to hate humanity. I'm no rocket scientist, but I know that our understanding of space and gravity is so beyond what shape the earth is. I'm amazed how much free information is available to people, but they still choose not to believe it. So I'm sorry, I just can't accept that flat earthers are real. I mean, I have nothing to back up this idea, though. I guess it's just a crazy theory of mine. Wait. Here's a lighthearted conspiracy for you. Some people think that the creators of the Sonic movie purposely made the design of Sonic bad in the first trailers as a marketing ploy. Everyone was outraged about the bad designs and ended up talking about it, giving the movie free promotion. Meanwhile, the executives were planning to use the better-designed Sonic all along. The evidence for this is... Well, I'm talking about the Sonic movie right now, so I'm contributing to the theory that this was all for publicity. Another piece of evidence is... look at this. What is this? There's no way that any executive or anyone with two eyeballs would okay this ever. And honestly, I might have believed this conspiracy theory if this movie didn't exist. If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too. But because it's current year and these types of things can still get past test screenings, I think sometimes Hollywood is just no good. I could be totally wrong though. If anyone watching worked on this movie and wants to be a whistleblower, let me know in the comments. Another rabbit hole I fell down was discovering a group of people called targeted individuals. Targeted individuals are a group of people that think the government is sending NSA agents to harass them. And this isn't just the American government, it turns out that every government in the world is harassing random citizens. They claim that they're being harassed because the government is trying to silence them for speaking the truth, when in reality, they're not speaking anything remotely true. A targeted individual will say things like, "People keep following me! There's a white van that's been parked in front of my house for hours! The government's been using electromagnetic radiation to transmit sounds and thoughts into my head!" And the whole time I'm watching these people, I'm thinking, "Yo, that sounds like schizophrenia, my dude. I don't know your life. Maybe you just got out of a really bad cult and you do have stalkers following you. Okay, yes, that happens. But it's not the government." One targeted individual I saw said that the government attacked them with a directed energy weapon and that they've been having migraines and coughing up blood. And I'm just flabbersmacked that someone actually believes this. How do you tell them, "Yo, the government's not harassing you. You probably have something going on in your digestive system. You need to see a doctor and a psychiatrist." And it's easy to point and laugh and make fun of these people, but after hearing their stories, I just feel bad for them. They are going through some major mental stuff, and I think they just need a friend to talk to. Most conspiracies can be disproven with a little bit of research, so it's important to think critically and not immediately believe everything you hear online. And if there's not enough data to make a judgment, then it's okay to say, "I don't know," or "I need to look into this further before making a conclusion." Viral misinformation punishes everybody, so it's important to do research, tests, and evaluations to form a concrete judgment before you hit that retweet button. There is one conspiracy theory, I believe, and that is that Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill... If you haven't read Lord of the Flies, you're probably going to have to in school one day. Let me give you an abridged version for when that time eventually comes. The Lord of the Flies is a book about a bunch of little British boys who got marooned on a deserted island, and the book tells the story about what the boys do to survive the elements, but also themselves. Within like a week on the island, the boys devolve into complete savages, covering themselves in face paint and killing a piggy. I said too much. And when I read the book in high school, I thought having the boys turn savage so quickly wasn't all that accurate. As a former young boy myself, I was insulted that William Golding thought that us little boys were so heartless. But then I remembered all the things that happened at my scout camp, Camp Geronimo, and I realized that Lord of the Flies is still inaccurate. The boys would have gone savage way faster. Listen, I'm a cautious person when I'm hanging around the guys. In PE, the other boys would be playing this game called Quarters, where you would fling quarters at people's knuckles until they bled, but I wouldn't play that game because it's dangerous and I'm a loser. Or when I was at a party and someone wanted to play the knife game to show off how good their hand-eye coordination was, I wouldn't play that game either because I needed my hands to draw. But something about being with the guys in the middle of the woods, I would live on the edge. Every summer, our troop stayed at this camp called Camp Geronimo, named after the Apache Indian who was the first person to yell Geronimo while doing a sick backflip into his pool. One time, me and a couple other boys, I don't remember who started it, but we were playing with matches, and okay, I know what you're thinking, but nothing bad happened, okay? We just accidentally lit some dried bushes on fire and it got somewhat out of control, but it's okay, it's fine, okay? We told the scoutmaster that there was a loose fire spreading faster than we could put it out, and he got everyone in the troop to stomp on it, and we never got in trouble. What were we doing with the matches? Oh, we were just lighting them and throwing them at each other. Anyway, about 30 other scout troops attended Camp Geronimo, and we would spend a whole week sleeping in tents and earning merit badges. Most of the camp honestly felt like school, but outside. Like, when you got to the camp, you were given a schedule of classes, and for the next 7 days, you would go to those classes and learn and fill out packets and sometimes even have homework. Which probably helped us not devolve into savages. I mean, sure, the classes weren't as boring as English or geometry. Geronimo's classes were wilderness survival, kayaking, or bear self-defense. Earning a merit badge required two things. The first thing, you had to write stuff down. Name and point out the major parts of a kayak. Kayak. Explain to your counselor the hazards you are most likely to encounter while participating in kayaking activities. Bears! And the second part of the merit badge, you had to actually go out and do stuff. Capsize the kayak, swim it and the paddle to the shore, and if you don't make it, the bears will get you. I never got the kayaking merit badge. You had to be at least 12 to go to Geronimo, but you could go as an 11-year-old if a parent was coming with you. And at the time, my dad was a camp counselor. My birthday was May 14th, and Geronimo was at the end of May, so I barely made the cutoff as the youngest person going. Geronimo was a big step from spending 3 days at Cub Scout Day Camp to spending a week in the wilderness. What made it worse was I was going to be spending a whole week with all the mean older scouts and my dad. There was this one scout named Paul. When I was 11, he was 15. So naturally, he would pick on me and make fun of me. Ha ha, I get it. I'm small, so I suck. But silver lining, he got fatter. And a couple years ago, he reached out to me. And I had been doing the whole YouTube thing for a while. He was off starting his own business. And he wanted to do some business opportunity with me. And I just said, hey, do you want to do my merch? So now he works for me. So kids, if you ever have bullies, just become successful on YouTube and then hire them to sell plushies. He's actually a really good merch guy. He gets all my stuff into these retail stores. So if you see a Floof plushie at Hot Topic, you can say, thanks, Paul. Bullies really do make a difference. Anyway, self-promotion aside, my first year at Geronimo, I was a little bit on the very young side compared to everyone else. I was taking a class called Orienteering. The class taught us how to read maps and use a compass. And one day, it was time for our class to go on a scavenger hunt thing. We were given a list of places we had to go to, and we were supposed to use our compass and count our paces to get to each specific location. Then when we got to our destination, there would be a marker somewhere, and we would have to write down what that marker was. There were 10 different markers that we had to find, and the course was supposed to lead us in a circle. The leader who was in charge of our group and the compass was an older scout named Paul. It wasn't the merch guy Paul, but I think it would be funnier if it was. Our group set off to the first location. Having a compass and counting your steps isn't the most accurate way of navigation, but we weren't allowed to use Google Maps, so. When we got to the spot, we had to look around for a little bit to find the marker, but we eventually found it, and then we were off to the second location. This time, the marker was harder to find. The spot we landed on was pretty far from where the marker actually was. At the third location, we couldn't find the marker. But we did see this reflective sign on a tree, and we figured that's what the marker was supposed to be, so we wrote it down. At this point, I decided to grab my own compass and give it a try. My compass pointed in a direction that was a little bit off from Paul's direction. Not by a whole lot, but just enough. But remember, I was the little kid. Nothing I said mattered. Paul said things to me like, oh, you don't know how to use a compass. I bet yours is broken. I'm never going to work for you one day. And you know what? I believed him. This guy is 15 years old. Do you know how wise and experienced he is? So we kept going and struggling. We used anything we found as a marker. Some piece of trash, it's a marker. Hey, this tree has an A and an M carved into a heart. Kind of weird that it's at an all-boys camp. Do you think that it's a marker? Eventually, we all had to admit that we were completely lost. The other boys told Paul to hand over his compass, and Paul reached into his pocket, pulled out his compass, and two buzz magnets. Buzz magnets are magnets that are shaped like a bullet, and you can throw them up in the air, and they make this cool buzzing sound. They sold them at the camp store, so that's why Paul had them. And everyone immediately figured out why we were lost. For those of you who don't know how compasses and magnets work, I don't know either. I think it has something to do with them coming from outer space. A compass is supposed to point to the magnetic North Pole, and a magnet will mess up the direction a compass is supposed to point in. Paul's compass wasn't pointing to his pants the whole time. We would have been suspicious if that had happened. But because his compass was right next to a magnet, it got uncalibrated. And then we all got lost in the woods and died. And that's why I don't have an orienteering merit badge. I was upset because my compass probably wasn't broken, but I didn't stand up for myself. Because I don't do that. I have more Camp Geronimo stories, like the time me and my friend threw a Ziploc bag full of water at the older kids' lean-to, and then I ran away so fast that I threw up. But I already did a video about that, and it's 5 years old, and it's very bad, and you're not allowed to watch it. So the moral of this video is, just because you're young doesn't mean you're stupid, but it does mean you make bad videos on YouTube. Also, check your pockets before going orienteering. Going orienteering. Sounds like a tongue twister. Going orienteering. Going orienteering. Going orienteering. Do you all remember that classic kids movie made in the 70s about a pig and a spider? Yeah, Charlotte's Web. Remember how it made us a lot of money? Wait, didn't we already have this conversation? Yeah, we did. But we're remaking this conversation with better graphics and Will Smith.
Yeah.
But why would we remake something that's already good on its own when we could be making something totally original? Because, Ethan, we don't want to take risks, and this'll make us more money.
But won't it be obvious to the audience that we're only doing these remakes for the money?
They'll watch it anyways.
I don't want you to think that I think that all sequels and remakes are bad. One of my favorite movies is a spin-off, and I'm very excited for the remake of The Dark Crystal to come out, and if you think I'm going to make a video talking about it when it comes out, you are absolutely correct. So Disney is remaking a bunch of classical movies into live action. They did it with Tarzan, Alice in Wonderland, and they did it with 101 Dalmatians twice. And as someone who enjoys cartoons a little too much, I think it would be cool if they remade Treasure Planet or Atlantis into live action. Both of those movies are underrated and have a lot of high-stake action-packed adventure that would be perfect for a reboot. And if they did get a reboot, it would introduce a new generation of kids to these awesome movies. But that's just my opinion. I'm sure Disney has good reasons for making sequels and spin-offs. Speaking of Disney sequels, I bet some of you forgot the very old straight-to-VHS Disney sequels. I try to forget about them every day. You can have your own opinion on the Disney sequels, but all the ones that went straight to VHS are terrible. Even The Lion King 2? That one emo lion was kinda hot. Did I stutter? I know all those sequels were technically done by a different studio, but let's just hope that Disney will finally break the bad sequel streak with Frozen 2. Or they should just let it go straight to VHS. Some franchises like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings have long overarching stories that are designed to have multiple installments, and as long as the studio doesn't stretch out one book into three movies, then those types of movies are absolutely fine. But I don't want to talk about those movies. I want to talk about sequels to standalone films. Now, I believe that a sequel to a standalone film can be done, but it's a delicate process. Because in the first movie, you establish the characters and the world they live in, then the protagonist has to overcome a problem, usually defeating a villain, and then the characters live happily ever after, and the story is all wrapped up nicely with a bow, and just, what a nice story we got there. I'm just gonna set it down and watch it from time to time and not change it one bit. But then a sequel comes along and says, oh, you thought the characters lived happily ever after? And then rips off the nice bow and says there's another more evil villain who wasn't mentioned in the first movie for some reason. If a sequel turns out bad, it can devalue the original movie. There's a reason we don't talk about Atlantis 2 or Pocahontas 2. Or Mulan 2 or Hunchback 2 or Aladdin 2 or Cinderella 2 or Beauty and the Beast 2 or Tarzan 2. 'Cause they didn't happen. So that's why I'm always impressed whenever a good sequel is made. And a studio that I think does an amazing job at making sequels is called DreamWorks. But I've noticed a pattern with DreamWorks franchises that I've coined the DreamWorks Trequel Paradox. I think the right word might be trilogy, but I'm just gonna say trequel. You see, DreamWorks has a track record of creating amazing sequels, but pretty subpar trequels. Here's what I mean. Now, keep in mind that these are not my opinion. These reviews are objectively correct facts. And also, I just wanna say I know that these movies are kids' movies, but I like animated movies more than real ones. And I'm a cartoon character, so Shrek 1. Great movie, great characters, great message, 10 onion layers out of 10. Shrek 2, it's the first movie in history to be better than the original, and it created the best music video of all time. I need 11 heroes out of 10. Shrek 3?
Not in my swamp.
Okay, I know we might not all agree, but here's another example. Kung Fu Panda 1, perfect movie. Any movie with anthropomorphic animals is always a win in my book. I think we have a best-selling franchise on our panda paws. Kung Fu Panda 2, just as good as the original. How many sequels have an animated bird as a villain? Besides Stuart Little 2. So far, we got 10s across the board, but then Kung Fu Panda 3 comes along and... I'm sorry, Jablinski, I just wasn't feeling this one. Which is why I was so worried for How to Train Your Dragon 3, and let's just say the DreamWorks Trequel Paradox didn't break its trend.
However, there's one franchise that doesn't follow the DreamWorks Treequel paradox, and it haunts my dreams. Works. And that franchise is Madagascar. I remember loving this movie as a kid, and apparently I wasn't the only kid who enjoyed it because it made $193,595,521. So DreamWorks made two more of these movies, and created The Thing That Haunts My Dreams. Now, personally, I don't really care for these movies. They're fine. I haven't rewatched them at all, so 5 out of 10. But there's another movie in this franchise. A movie that shouldn't be as good as it is, and honestly, I'm a little embarrassed to admit that it might make the list of my top 5 favorite movies. I don't think enough people are talking about this movie, so I'm gonna be the one who breaks the ice. That metaphor is relevant because we're talking about Penguins of Madagascar. Penguins of Madagascar is the best movie that features penguins ever. Better than Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2, and it's 1,000 times more realistic than March of the Penguins. There's a scene where the penguins fall off an airplane and go hopping from one airplane to another. It's so entertaining, and it's all done in one continuous camera shot, so I'm not talking with a hint of irony when I say that this scene is a cinematic masterpiece. I don't remember when I first watched Penguins of Madagascar. It came out when I was 18, so I'm probably not the target demographic. But I remember after watching it thinking, wow, that's a good movie. And I didn't think about that movie again until years later on Halloween night 2018. I was in a Discord call with some friends who were also spending their Halloween night behind a computer, and naturally we were discussing which Madagascar sequel was better. Some people actually liked the second one, which was surprising, and I said, well, no matter what you think of the sequels, at least we can all agree that Penguins of Madagascar is better than both of them, right? And everyone in the call was like, what are you talking about? And instead of watching a scary movie that Halloween night, we all virtually watched a movie about penguins together, and I think everyone liked it. Okay, let's talk about another studio, Pixar. Pixar movies do a good job at appealing to a wide audience. Kids like them because they're a cartoon, and adults like them because of their heavy themes like old people dying. Almost every movie Pixar has made has been a cinematic classic. Penguins of Madagascar, however, is not one of those emotionally inducing movies. It doesn't teach a thought-provoking life lesson. It's an hour and a half of penguins fighting an octopus, and I love it. Every morning when I watch Penguins of Madagascar, I feel like a kid again. I am jealous of the writing in this movie. Okay, there's one fart joke, but that's my only complaint. Now, do I think Penguins is better than all of these Pixar movies? No, definitely not. But I do think this movie is really good, and IMDb gave it a 6.7 when it clearly deserves a 10. I don't know if this video convinced you to watch Penguins of Madagascar, but if you're retroactively looking for the next summer blockbuster movie to watch, then it's got my recommendation. James, are you being sponsored by Penguins? I wish. There wasn't really a point to this video, I just wanted an excuse to talk about my favorite DreamWorks spinoff. So, in conclusion, I'm really excited for The Dark Crystal 2 coming out on Netflix. The show's being released on August 30th, which is coincidentally this channel's 5-year anniversary. So don't expect me to work that day.
What's in the box? I said, what's in the box? I said, what's in the box? I can make a great boat out of this.
So this one time, when I was in the third grade, for some reason our teacher thought it would be a good idea to get his entire class to participate in a cardboard boat race. Cardboard boat racing is this event where teams of people build their own boats out of cardboard and then race against other people's cardboard boats. Now, you might be thinking that cardboard really isn't the best material to make a boat out of. And you're right. But cardboard is cheap, you can get big pieces of it, and they float in the water for a little bit. Perfect for making boats out of. It's good, short-lived entertainment. It's yachts of fun! Apparently, a lot of other schools got their students to do cardboard boat racing. I thought it was just a strange thing my teacher made us do, but if other teachers did it, I guess he wasn't the only weirdo. I don't know what cardboard boat racing is supposed to teach you, maybe teamwork skills and shipbuilding? I mean, it would come in handy if I was stranded on an island with cardboard and duct tape and I could tell everyone, "Don't worry guys, I learned how to make boats out of these things in the third grade." But no one else in my school did cardboard boat racing. It was just my class. And I think part of the reason we did this was because the class I was in was an honors class, so we were better than everyone else.
Guys, I need to tell you about how friggin' smart I am.
So in the second grade, everyone took this test to see if you would get put into the honors class, which, I'm gonna be honest, I don't remember taking it. I just remember my mom sitting me and my twin sister down and telling us that we weren't gonna be in the same class anymore because I made it into the honors classes and my sister didn't.
Haha, loser!
The honors program was called DOGS, which stood for DANG! Original Gangsta Students! Okay, that's not actually the name, I made that up. If you got accepted into DOGS, you stayed in the DOGS program for the rest of elementary school. So I basically had the same kids in my class for 5 school years. And our class became known as the DOGS kids. I think since I was in the DOGS program, I wasn't bullied nearly as much as I should have been. Because everyone in my class was a huge nerd. Also, I never really learned how to interact with people socially because I already knew everyone in my class. So all the DOGS were cool with each other, but all the non-DOGS hated us. They thought that us DOGS thought that we were so much better than them. And we were. Now, call me old-fashioned, but I think the third grade is a little too soon to tell if you're smart or not. I would say that the DOGS program did not make me a smarter person. I don't speak for everyone, this was just my experience, but in high school, my twin sister was a way better student. High school didn't have the DOGS program, so me and my sister were in the same classes again, and she was a straight A student while I was about a straight B and C student. So all the math I've learned is telling me that something's not adding up. It probably had nothing to do with being in the honors program in elementary school. I probably just procrastinated a lot in high school. Okay, now let's get back to the actual topic of the video. Leading up to the event, the teacher wanted us to stay after school to help make the boats, and I, being the loyal dog that I was, stayed after school exactly 0 times. Sorry dudes, I take the bus home, and last time I missed the bus, my mom got mad at me and I cried, and she had to pick me up. So actually, if I was deserted on an island, I wouldn't be much help. I would have to get my mom to pick me up. This event was at a medium-sized man-made lake in Arizona, because we don't have real lakes, they're all man-made. And it was right next to a college, and a lot of college kids like to get drunk there. We ended up making 2 boats. One was white, and one was blue with a dragon head at the front and a tail in the back, and they both could hold 10 people. There wasn't enough room for everyone in the class to get a spot on the boat, and the kids who actually helped build it got a reserved seat. But since I was a scrawny white boy that didn't take up much space, I gotta sit in the very front, because they were the coolest and smallest seats. The person who I sat next to was this girl named Priscilla. I still keep in contact with her, and I asked if I could say her name in this video, and she said yes. Later in life, she was the first girl to ever slap me. I didn't ask permission to tell that story. While we were waiting for our turn to race, my dad got me a snow cone, and that snow cone was the very first time I remember getting a brain freeze. It hurts to eat this. Yeah. They do that. When it was our turn, we rowed the boat out and we actually stayed afloat. I mean, it was only a couple inches away from sinking, but it worked. My mom told me beforehand that if the boat sunk, I should kick off my shoes because that would weigh me down and I would drown. Thanks for the vote of confidence, Mom! And I remember being so afraid of the boat sinking. Not because I could drown, but because I didn't want to lose my shoes. So there we were, a bunch of 8-year-olds in a glorified cardboard box, on a lake, with 3 other boxes filled with drunk college students. The course we had to take was pretty simple. It only had 2 left turns. Should have been a piece of cake. And we were doing pretty good until we had to make the first left turn. We messed up on that part. We practiced turning on land all the time. But for some reason, when we were in the water, our turning maneuver wasn't working. We kind of just drifted forward. We were pretty much all stranded. We didn't know how to drive this thing, and we were running out of time since the cardboard doesn't last that long when it's wet. But there were these lifeguard/helper people going around in canoes, and one person came up to our boat and he just kind of pushed it with his paddle and he turned the boat, and we were back in the race. Well, actually, by this point, everyone else had already completed the course. But we were still floating. We were still gonna finish this. When it came time for the second turn, the same thing happened. We didn't learn anything. They never taught us this in honors classes. By this point, the next 4 people racing just went. They got tired of waiting. And while the canoe boat guy was trying to teach us how to turn, the other boats just passed us. Eventually, we did get the turning thing down and we made it back to shore. The boat stayed up the entire time. Out of the 4 people we raced against, we came in 8th. I kinda wish something bad did happen, like the boat flipped over or a shark ate one of the kids. That would have been a better YouTube video. But that also would have been lying. And then afterwards, the president came down and high-fived all of us. And to prove I'm not lying, here's some pictures of me in front of the boat. We had to take the dragon head off because it didn't fit with all of us, but we kept the tail. And you'll also notice how cramped the seats are and the girl who later on slaps me. Here's a boat with a roof. Here's a picture of the snow cone that gave me my first brain freeze. Here's us in the water next to a pretty big boat. And look, our other white boat is getting blocked off by the bigger boat. Notice how our boat is going in the wrong direction and how close we are to being submerged. And here's a picture of the grown-ups carrying the boat out of the water after a long day. And I'm not in this picture. I wanted to get to land as soon as possible. Here's a picture of me during Halloween. I dressed up as a ninja. I think it was the Halloween after the bunny. And there's a plushie of a Neopet in the background. Do you guys remember Neopets? All my Neopets are probably dead now. Here's a picture of me with a giant pencil. It's actually a model rocket, but it looks like a pencil. Isn't that adorable? Remember my science fair video where I launched rockets? Yeah, this wasn't that time. This is a completely different model rocket. And here's me in a tub of animal plushies. And this bird plushie right here was actually my favorite. I got them from someone else's birthday. It was in a goodie bag. It was a pirate-themed birthday. So it was like, you know, a little tiny parrot. I really liked that bird. His name was Birdie, and now he's gone. And here's me dressed up as Galileo. Yay! A new video is done! Sorry it's been like a month since my last...
Hello everyone, it's me, James. I just wanted to let you know that I'm launching this card game called Cafe Chaos on Kickstarter today. There'll be more info at the end of the video. This isn't some bit. I actually made a card game and I worked really hard on it, so please click the link in the description to get your...
My name's Joe Exotic. I exploit dangerous wild animals for profit, and that's only the least reprehensible thing I've done. In this 8-part docuseries, I'll show you the bad, the horrible, and downright disgusting aspects of what it's like to be a polyamorous, meth-addicted Tiger King. I'm the real Pokemon Master, you hear?
And just like that, by watching other garbage humans on his television, James felt ever so slightly at peace while the world crumbled around him. For the first time in months, James smiled.
I'll be real with you, being in quarantine has sucked a lot. I miss hanging out with friends, I miss going to non-essential businesses, and I miss wiping my butt with toilet paper instead of my dog. All I've had for company has been Floof and my own mind. So it's been a little hard to stay motivated during this time. But if staying home instead of going to Disneyland will save people's lives, then I guess I'll have to make that sacrifice. It's so hard to be a good person. Some of the things that have been helping me mentally has been exercise, a positive mindset, and garbage television. I used to think that garbage television was stupid and a waste of my mortal existence. But as I started watching more garbage, I realized that I've already been fascinated and enjoyed watching garbage content for years. Have you seen the videos I make? I've said this in my conspiracy video, that I love watching crazy people talk for hours. Now take those same people, give them a camera crew and a budget, and you got a brand new show on TLC. What's that? You've never heard of TLC, the Learning Channel? Well, TLC is full of wonderful programs and documentaries that'll teach you if you become trashy enough, you'll end up on TV. And that's what schools should be teaching. No, this video isn't sponsored by TLC, but if they wanted to sponsor me, I'd say no. I just want to be on an episode of My Strange Addiction. I'll tell you what the addiction is later, TLC. One show I've been unhealthily binging is called 90 Day Fiancé. It's about when a boy meets a girl, or a girl meets a girl, or a man meets a much younger girl online, and they sort of like each other, but they're from different countries, so when they meet each other, they have 90 days to decide if they want to get married before their visa expires. It's great that the internet exists so that these clearly desperate people in different countries even have the chance to form a relationship. And it's equally great that the internet exists so we can watch very personal moments of these strangers' lives. The show really shines with the most garbage of couples. I've seen other YouTubers talk about this one specific couple, Big Ed and Rose. I don't want to make fun of Big Ed's appearance, but let's just say he saves a lot of money on scarves. And turtle necks. He's a 54-year-old pursuing a relationship and wanting to marry a 23-year-old Filipino woman named Rose. And Ed has a daughter that's 6 years older than Rose. And he's older than Rose's father. Can you imagine for a second if your mom was 6 years younger than you? And on top of that, Ed is a huge liar. He lied about his height. He lied about wanting to have kids with her. He's also really mean to Rose. I mean, sure, he's old enough to be her father, so he's probably used to talking down to young people. And a dad telling their kids that their legs are hairy and their breath stinks is justifiable. But this is his girlfriend. At least make her a bag lunch first. Even if I thought Big Ed was the best guy in the world, do I think a relationship could work between people with a 31-year age gap?
Well, let's take a look at the math. Here is the half your age plus 7 rule graphed out. So if you're 30, then it's socially acceptable to be dating someone who's 22. Now, obviously this graph isn't set in stone. But for reference, here's Big Ed's age versus Rose's age. So when Ed was 40 and taking care of his 15-year-old daughter, Rose was 9.
So do I think an age gap of 31 can work? Well, mathematically and common sense speaking, not until Ed is 76 and Rose is 45. I think that'll take longer than 90 days, though.
The second and third reason I love this show is David and Lana. I haven't seen any YouTubers talk about this couple, but they need to. Meet David, a 60-year-old guy from Vegas who's fallen head over wallet for a Ukrainian woman named Lana. He spent 7 years and $250,000 on a relationship where he hasn't even met the other person. He's tried to meet up with Lana on 3 separate occasions already, but got stood up every single time. Now he's putting all of his credit cards on the table and is willing to risk it all on a 4th trip to the Ukraine to meet his soon-to-be mail-order...
Наречена.
Who doesn't speak English. Long story short, they meet after 13 episodes, David gives her a brand new iPhone X to text him on, only for him to get eternally ghosted because her nails were too long to text him back. Let me remind you that they were in contact for 7 years. That's how old Rose was when Ed was 38. Me briefly describing these two's relationship just now was so much of an emotional roller coaster that I don't even need to go back to theme parks anymore. It makes me want to puke, and I hope you can see why I love this show so much. I know that reality TV is fake, and who knows if this entire relationship was scripted and manufactured for the show. But I don't care if it's fake. This smile is real. Watching garbage television all day isn't as fun or healthy as it may seem, believe it or not. Even though I spent a good portion of this video hyping up trash TV, you should also be doing something productive. Like watching YouTube videos. To compensate for all the garbage I watch, I've been exercising more. Right when the pandemic began its exponential spike, I bought a home gym machine and I've been working out 3 times a week with my friend DJ. DJ and I met because we're both friends with Alan Becker, who makes these animations versus animator videos, and one day I noticed that DJ's muscles were a lot like one of my Japanese animes. He was a walking, breathing protagonist that my body dysmorphia had been holding me back from becoming. I reached my skinny hands out to DJ and said, "Hey, DJ, can we work out together?"
So this is where I put the iPad to talk to DJ.
Oh, hey, James.
This is where I got the treadmill, the weights, and this is my favorite piece of equipment, this rag up here so I don't bump my head when I do pull-ups. This is where I keep my air conditioner because it gets very hot in this garage. This is what it used to look like a month ago. Anyway,
the reason I started working out more seriously was because people were calling me skinny and other slanderous synonyms like slender and scrawny. And I told my friends that I was hurt by these comments, but they all unanimously agreed that it's true. I am a slim Jim. It's important to have a reason for working out. Mine is self-loathing. DJ is forcing me to push myself. We've only been going for about 3 months, or a whole 90-day fiancé, and I've already gone from struggling to lift up this much weight to struggling to lift up this much weight. Sorry if I'm flexing too much on you, I'm just proud of my progress. The point is, while trash TV is fun, remember to mix in some productive activities during the day. For example, exercise. You don't need equipment. Do 10 push-ups right now, loser. Clean up after yourself. During these hard times, keeping your space organized and tidy will be a big boost on your mental health. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Learn how to cook. You should also be eating healthy too. Stop eating so many bagel bites. Watch parkour fails. Remind yourself how safe you are inside. These guys could get COVID and a broken tooth. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Shave your head. Who cares anymore? Watch competitive sports fishing and get your blood pressure to rise so much that you feel pressured into working out again. And oh my god, how big is that fish? Oh my god, it's a 1,200-pound bull shark! They need 7 people to pull it on the boat and... oh my god, is that Big Ed? I like to think that my videos, for the most part, have greatly improved in quality from the past year. Let's watch a clip of my first video. Roll the clip.
So you know those books you make in elementary school that you write as a class and some publishing company makes them into a real book?
So you know those books you make in elementary school?
Man, I don't think I could sound less insecure. And I was 18 when I made that video. I was legally old enough to... get married. So I'm always trying to improve the quality of my videos. I've gotten a better microphone, I've learned to level out my audio, I like to think my drawings are more lively and move more, but sometimes when I record, I tend to smack my lips. And I always thought it was because my mouth was dry. So then I would chug an entire water bottle, but I would still sometimes have smacky lips. So I thought, is it possible I could be drinking too much water? Is that even a thing? Maybe I should drink Gatorade. So no big deal, right? First I Google, how to stop lip smacking. And since I couldn't find anything that had pictures...
how can you read this? There's no pictures.
I decided to ask YouTube instead. I don't know, maybe someone out there makes voice acting tutorials. But instead, I stumbled upon something indescribable.
So,
tonight is the return of the beloved lip-smacking.
So there was this about 14-year-old girl just getting real close to the microphone and smacking her lips. And apparently there's a lot higher demand for people who smack their lips than people who don't. Jeez, I don't even know why I try to fix that problem. But you're probably thinking, James, this is just one video, right? This is just one person making a YouTube video, right? There's not like an entire community dedicated to...
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, ASMR. This is the entire Wikipedia page printed out with notes. You know, I bet at least some people watching this already know what it is. And you didn't tell me about it. What, did you think I wasn't going to find out?
And my college charges 5 cents to print a page. So I spent 65 cents printing out this Wikipedia article. Money I'm never getting back. So what is ASMR? Basically, it's a video of someone whispering into a microphone and making certain sounds. For about 20 to 60 minutes. Now you might be thinking, why? Why do they do this? The Wikipedia article says that the purpose of ASMR is to give listeners sort of a tingly sensation in the head, and some people describe it as akin to a mild electric current. The best way I can think to describe it is, you know those Bob Ross videos? Remember how you just loved to watch them even though you couldn't paint? Why did you watch them? Yeah, you watched him because you loved his soft, gentle voice and the sounds of the paintbrush on the canvas. And then when he beat his paintbrush on that little thing, you can beat me, Bobby. I think that's what ASMR is trying to create. It's basically supposed to give you the same feeling when you watch a Bob Ross video. Man, you're watching those videos a lot differently than me. Now, since I read the Wikipedia page, let me tell you some useless facts about it. The first case of ASMR was in a book written in 1925 that said, "With a roughness in her voice like a grasshopper, which rasped his spine deliciously and sent running up into his brain waves of sound." The frick? In this part about evolutionary history, David Hurin states that, "The ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic..." Faith, what is this word? Altruistic?
Altruistic.
"The ASMR effect is clearly strongly related to the perception of non-threat and altruistic attention, and has strong similarities to physical grooming in primates, who derive enormous pleasure, borderlining on euphoria, when being groomed by a grooming partner, not to get clean, but rather to bond with each other." So that begs the question, do dogs like it? ASMR was officially created in 2008, but it didn't get popular until a Facebook group along with a subreddit was created in 2010. Now, it wasn't always called ASMR. Instead, people used phrases like brain massage, head tingle, brain tingle, spine tingle, and my personal favorite, attention-induced head orgasm. What are you doing with those grasshoppers, ma'am? But a lot of people didn't want to use orgasm in the name, because then people would think that this ASMR stuff is pretty sexual, which it totally isn't, you guys, except in 2015 when people started making a new genre of ASMR videos called ASMR Otica. And something else that's worth noting on the Wikipedia page, the popularity of ASMR videos featuring women does substantially exceed those created by male performers. However, there are some popular male ASMRists, and not all video creators are heterosexual. So can I not make ASMR videos? Is that what it's saying? So the creator of the Facebook group back in 2010 coined the term autonomous sensory meridian response. Autonomous meaning that it's spontaneous, sensory meaning the senses or sensation, and meridian meaning orgasm. I'm not making that up. Now, the word meridian doesn't mean orgasm at all. But in the Wikipedia article, it says, "Alan chose the word meridian, mistakenly believing that it was a kinder way of saying orgasmic." And look, it's even on our blog. So you're telling me this whole time, people have been using ASMR to mean climax, and that's not even what it means. Okay, some other things in the Wikipedia article I want to talk about is that apparently not everyone experiences ASMR. There's also a type of ASMR called binaural recording, where performers use two microphones and place them where your ears would be. So it's extra creepy. Another popular... Look, I'm lip smacking right now. Another popular theme is that these videos do a lot of role-playing, specifically clinical role-playing. Now, I'm someone who never really got into the whole role-playing experience. Except when Captain Sparkles does it. Come on, where's part 5? Let's read the wiki! The ASMRists provide clinical or medical services, including routine general medical examinations. The creator of these videos make no claim to the reality of what is depicted, and the viewer is intended to be aware that they are watching and listening to a simulation, performed by an actor. Yeah, I don't think we can really use the word actor, Wikipedia. Okay, what else? There's little scientific work done on it. Some people say that it's great for fighting insomnia and anxiety, but others say, no, it's not. But I mean, it's not like it's bad for you. And there has been one song made to trigger ASMR, but I listened to it. I don't think song is the best word for it. It's more just normal ASMR audio. Just because it was released on an album doesn't make it a song, Wikipedia. And there's one comment on this video that I think sums up ASMR pretty well. I'm extremely uncomfortable. I had no idea that ASMR was even a thing. Did you know it was a thing? I didn't. Heck, even College Humor made a parody ASMR video. I just want to make things clear. I'm not hating on people who make ASMR videos or even people who like to watch it. And I'm certainly not jealous that some of these people have hundreds of thousands of subscribers and millions of views and all they're doing is just brushing a microphone for 20 minutes. But guys, I think this ASMR thing is getting a little out of hand. Keep in mind that all these videos are about 15 minutes to an hour long. We have this girl with a southern accent singing I'm Blue and Numa Numa to remove a curse from you.
Numa Numa Numa, yay, I'm blue, dubba dee dubba da.
Inaudible whispering and tongue clicking, a couple of dentist roleplays, a library book return roleplay, eating Chinese food, a couple of Yu-Gi-Oh card readings, a Minecraft Let's Play, a Five Nights at Freddy's tribute, Undertale, a Mario Maker Let's Play, Evening with the Vampire, the Joker, Satan, alien abduction for men, and torture roleplay. Really? You could type ASMR and then type anything after that and you'll get something.
You think God stays in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created?
And what's doubly weird is that all of these videos are recent. Like, they were made in 2015 or even 2016. Well, obviously Undertale and Mario Maker are recent. But Shrek? Shrek?
Shrek.
But just to finish things up, I just want to get something off my chest. This Undertale ASMR was pretty good. Compared to the other ones. You still might be thinking, yeah, it's pretty weird, James. Yeah, it is pretty weird. We've gotten pretty deep in the weirdness with those alien ones. And they have almost 1 million views. I just think this one deserves more views. You know, I just want one ASMR video to be like 40 minutes long, and then in the middle somewhere, the person just screams. Like, really hardcore screams. Yeah.
James!
Hey, Dad, I kind of have a weird request.
Okay.
Can you film the dogs with headphones in them and then send me the video?
You mean dogs wearing earbuds?
Yeah. Make sure to film it horizontally.
I don't think they won't keep earbuds in their ears.
Hey, England! For the entirety of this video, I'm going to be calling this sport football and this sport soccer, okay? Oh, blimey, mate, we got a cheeky bugger here. We do. Well, pip-pop cheerio. Hope a stiffy wanks your knockers. God save the queen.
What did I just say? So, the theme of this video, sports. Either you love them or you hate them. Or you have some other third opinion. Growing up, my family was never big on sports. We never watched any games on the telly. I'm sorry, I still got some British in me. And me and my dad never went out and played catch. He also never taught me how to shave. He was gone a lot. He always talked about Heather. Okay, but I did play soccer for a couple years when I was like 7. I was on the green team. Sports at that age aren't even like sports. It's just parents wanting you to go outside more. Being a goalie on a soccer team when you're that age is super stressful. The whole team is counting on you. Even stopping a ball that's gently rolled towards you is difficult. One time, the other team we were playing was so sucky that all the players spent the whole game on their half of the field. And I was the goalie for my team, and I remember just sitting down and picking at the grass. Soccer was the only sport that I've been on a team for. Well, I mean, I'm not counting the track team that I was on for only 2 days. There is this kid I mentioned a long time ago in my Boy Scout video named Micah. Now, he was a soccer fanatic. I wonder what he's doing.
Okay, England, we have this holiday called Thanksgiving. We celebrate it because it's when we left your lame country. Don't ask what we did next. So on Thanksgiving, for some reason, it's a tradition to play football before you go and eat food. So while the ladies stay inside and cook the meal, the men go outside and throw the pigskin around. I'm just kidding, you guys. I'm not a sexist. But I mean, that is what happens. So one time during Thanksgiving, I was a little kid, like 11 or 12, and I was playing football with my dad and his other 40-year-old friends. So me being the littlest, I wasn't particularly the best player. But while we were playing, I freaking caught the ball. I caught it! And then I just started booking it across the field. I've probably never ran so quickly my entire life. And I actually made it. I scored a home run.
What?
And that, to me, was such a pivotal point in my life. I felt so accomplished. Me, a little kid, scored a goal against a bunch of adults. I would think back to it if I was ever feeling sad. Like, oh, I failed this math test, but, one time I scored a basket against a bunch of adults when I was 12. But I remember I was a senior in high school, and I was just driving, and then the thought came to me, they probably let me score that touchdown. They were going easy on me. Man, growing up sucks. I was never all that competitive as a child. Well, okay, I was never competitive when it came to sports.
It's just a game, guys. We're supposed to have fun. Winning's not that important.
Sports are good at that age, though. They promote physical activity, you can make friends, you might like the sport and want to pursue it more, and it's not a big deal if you suck. I'm totally making my future kid play a sport. That is, if I have kids. What if I die alone? People make the comparison that some people watch gaming channels for the same reason that others watch sports. You're watching someone play a video game? Why do you watch someone play when you can just go to the computer and play it yourself? Now replace the word video game with sport and outside with computer, and it's the same thing. Loading Artist made a very good comic about the point I'm trying to make. I'll just read it. What are you doing? Watching this guy play a game. It's pretty funny. Wait, so you aren't even playing? Yeesh, what a waste of time. And then he goes and watches a sports game. Man, Loading Artist is so much cooler than me. I've said this before, but he was such a big inspiration to me when I was first starting out. I just wanted to say that again. Go read all of his comics right now. I just want to say it's fine if you watch sports. Granted, I won't watch them with you because they're incredibly boring. You want to know why gaming channels work? It's because they play different games. Even Captain Sparkles, who mostly plays Minecraft and also who I love, by the way. And I did buy a t-shirt to prove my point, but it's still in the mail. See, look, I bought a t-shirt and I bought sunglasses right here. So I just want to give a big shout out to themakershop.com, who's taking a million years to ship me my Captain Sparkle shirt. It was going to be so cool. I was going to say, I bought a t-shirt to prove my point. And then I was going to flick the sunglasses that I also bought down. Notice me, senpai. This email says it's going to take 3 to 7 business days to ship. Well, yesterday was the 13th business day. So what is it, Jordan? 7 or 13? So I bought this just so I have something physical to show my love for Captain Sparkles. I've been watching all of his videos since TNT. Oh, he's changed it. But the point is, he changes around the format and the rules of his Let's Plays with all the different maps he plays. It's different for every video, even his role-playing ones, which I'm still waiting for part 5 to come out. Like, imagine if there was a gaming channel that only played the first Super Mario game. It might be fun to watch at first, especially if they're good at playing the game, and it might be fun to watch how other people play it and see what they do. But for 50 years? Don't you think that would get a little boring after a while? I mean, only so much can happen, and that's what I think sports is like sometimes. It's the same game, same rules, over and over and over. Like, spice some things up once in a while. What if for basketball there were like mystery boxes like in Mario Kart and you could grab them and that would give you an advantage? How about if a team is losing, they get some wacky, hilarious handicap depending on how far behind they are so it's not hopeless for them? But James, sports is supposed to measure your talent. Whatever. It gets boring to watch. I can understand if the teams are neck and neck and it comes down to one final play like what it does in every sports movie. That's why they have to use that plot device in all the sports movies to make it interesting. But a lot of times, sports aren't like that. Like if one team is leading by 50 points, why even bother watching the last 5 minutes of the game? I would rather watch any Air Bud movie than a sports game because stuff actually happens in those movies. And they're different each time. And there's a dog wearing shoes in it. I just want to say for the record, record, if my kid grew up to be a professional athlete, then I'll watch sports. But only the games that they play in, and only the games that are interesting. Ugh, why is it sociably acceptable to know everything about sports and dress up, but it isn't acceptable to dress up in fursuits and go to cons? You see, I don't think it's acceptable to do either of those things. You're both weird. But don't let me stop you. You do you. Follow your dreams. Okay, let's talk about some stories. In grade school, I was put in the honor classes for my academic achievement, which did not help me whatsoever. It probably hurt me when I went to college. But that's not what we're talking about. Anyway, so during recess, the whole class would play kickball. Kickball is a fun sport. Anyone can play it, but it takes a pro to be good at it. What? There was this girl in my class who was the best kickball player, and then later, when she grew up, she became the valedictorian of my high school and went to Harvard. I'm proud of her. Also, my ginger friend and Nick Jiggly, who I've mentioned before, he also got to speak during graduation. Actually, okay, so Nick had this thing where his hands would shake. I don't think it was Parkinson's. I actually emailed him about it, and he said, I asked a doctor, and he said it's just a mild tremor. Ha. So he's probably fine. But whenever he would give a presentation in front of the class, his hands would be shaking, and people would think, oh, he's nervous. But no, actually, he's the most extroverted and outgoing kid that I knew. He just had a condition. Well, that was a pretty long tangent. What are we talking about? Sports? Oh, yeah, kickball. Since everyone in the class was kind of already a nerd, I wasn't usually the last one to be picked on a team. I was usually the fourth or third to last. It's so nerve-wracking when the last five are still standing, and you think, don't let me be last, don't let me be last. And then you get picked, and it's like, ha! They think I'm better than you! Which I'm not, actually. One time, I think I was like 15 or something, and me and this big group of people went to a sports complex. And we were having fun, playing games, and running around, and then, boom! A soccer ball just whacked me in the face! I got a bloody nose and I couldn't stand up without toppling over for a few seconds. And then I went to a bathroom, you know, freshened up. What sucked was that it was a girl that hit me and people made jokes like, oh, you got hit by a girl. It still hurt, okay? So I sat out for a couple of minutes. I waited until I stopped seeing flashing colors. Then, like the man that I am, I went back and played some more. And not 5 minutes go by when it happened again! Different person this time. But after the second time, I was completely out. I mean, I wasn't unconscious, but I couldn't get up. I remember my brother had to carry me out on his shoulder. I wanted to make this video about 6 months ago, but then I thought, no, I'll save it for Halloween, because of theming or whatever. I don't know. Shut up, I don't have to explain myself. I'm excited to tell you this story. Wow! So, haunted houses. I think haunted houses, they're fine, but I don't want to brag or anything, but since the age of 16, I've never been in a haunted house that I was scared of. Granted, all the haunted houses I've been in were free and didn't have me sign a waiver, and when I was little, sure, I was terrified of haunted houses. It's just, I don't know, I think I kept telling myself that none of it was real, and then when I grew up, I just always knew that none of it was real. When you can see the severed hand is made of plastic, all the tension you previously had is kinda lost. And sure, I still get startled at the jump scares, but since they don't stab you or anything, it's always awkward afterwards. Hello? I'm just gonna walk this way now. Or maybe I don't get scared because I don't feel emotions anymore. Who knows? But there's one haunted house experience during my senior year of high school that I will never forget because it was probably one of the most traumatizing things I've ever seen. I haven't seen that many traumatizing things. And also, I won't forget it because I'm about to immortalize the experience by making a YouTube video about it. Alright, my senior year, I was part of my school's drama club. I was a theater kid. And the clubs at the school got to help do some of the activities for the school's fair. The whole school is putting on a fair, probably to raise money or something. It seems that schools are always in need of some extra cash. Have you ever noticed that? So the football team gotta do the dunk tank, the band kids, like, face painted or something, I don't remember, it's not important. And the theater kids, since the fair is in October and that's Halloween's month, we gotta put on a haunted house. Cool! The drama club was separated into groups, and we would each be a scary part in the haunted house. And we gotta make the haunted house inside the school, so we had a lot of area to work with, and there was a lot of space in between each scary thing. My group, what we did, is we dressed up as vampires, but scary vampires, and we sat at this dinner table, and we decorated it with fake organs, goblets filled with blood, red Kool-Aid, and we had this freshman girl that was laying on top of the table, and we put fake organs coming out of her, you know, to make it look like we were eating her, because vampires eat people. Okay, saying that out loud, I realize that doesn't make any sense. Why would a group of vampires be eating someone? They don't do that. We put a yellow shade over the light above for a good spoopy atmosphere. We had a smoke machine, some ambient Halloween music playing. Spooky, scary skeletons and shivers down your spine. Our group was pretty legit. Whenever a group of people walked by, we would just silently stare at them, and then the freshman on the table would scream at the top of her lungs. She was really good at screaming, by the way. And since we had so much space in between each of the scary parts, when they walked past us, we would get up and chase them. Yeah, it was fun. Okay, so you have to understand that theater kids are very loud, extroverted people. I need to tell you about this one kid who was in my vampire group. We'll just name him Balake. Yeah, Balake. Balake and I were both part of the school's improv club, so we were both pretty funny people, except Balake was just out there. He was loud. It seemed he was just always screaming. I didn't have any classes with him, but he was obviously the high self-esteem class clown kind of kid. So Balake, being the loud and more popular kid, he got to sit at the head of our table. We had done the haunted house for about 2 hours at this point, and I want you to think what it's like to go inside a haunted house. Just going in for 5 minutes, that will already make me feel uncomfortable and sweaty. All the strobe lights, the smoke, and the freshman over here who had to be constantly screaming bloody murder. Again, you did a good job, freshman. And we were supposed to get a break sometime in the middle, but since the haunted house was so popular, we didn't get one break. So I'm a little loopy after doing all this for so long, right? I was totally not ready for what was about to happen. This group of people walk in, and we do our normal thing. We get up and we chase them, but Balake got pretty physical with this one little boy. Like, he kind of shook him up a bit. And I didn't see exactly what happened, but apparently this little boy was holding a fish in a plastic baggie. You know those little tiny fish that are actually supposed to be used as food for bigger fish that you can win as prizes in fairs, and 99% of the time the fish die within 2 weeks because you don't have the right aquarium equipment, so you just put them in water and watch them slowly die? You know those fish? I didn't think people were allowed to bring their new pet fish into the haunted house, but I guess he smuggled it in or something. I didn't see the kid drop the fish. Maybe Balake slapped it out of his hands. That could have happened. I just heard a scream, and I saw a fish flopping around in a puddle on the floor. Fish look like they're in so much pain when they're out of water. I don't flail around uncontrollably when I go swimming. Like, calm down, fish. I'm silently panicking, because the fish looks like he's going to die in 3 seconds if we don't do something. I start thinking of places we can put the fish. The toilet. But Balake, without saying anything, just immediately bent down, cupped the tiny fish in his hands, he ran back to the table, he put the fish in an empty goblet, and then he poured red Kool-Aid into the cup? Nah, I'm just kidding. He got a water bottle from under the table because they gave us water bottles, and the fish was fine, ladies and gentlemen. It all happened so fast, and thanks to Balake's quick thinking, he saved this little kid's fish. The kid was still a couple of feet down the hall. Balake took the goblet in his hands, he walked it over to the kid, he reached out his hand to give the kid his fish. And then he just chugged the drink! Balake! He drank the fish! And this little kid let out the most blood-curdling scream. It sounded like this kid just watched his pet get swallowed by a complete stranger. It was honestly the loudest scream I heard that night. I bet the next group of people behind these guys were thinking, oh man, whatever's next must be really scary to get that kid to scream like that. The kid started trying to attack Balake, and I'm sure if he had the correct tools, he would have murdered him. Balake eventually spat out the fish.
Why?
He didn't swallow it, thankfully. He just kept it swimming in his mouth.
But I mean, that's what you gotta do when you're working in a haunted house. You have to scare people any way you can.
I was just a bystander, and I still wake up in a cold sweat thinking about it. Turns out this kid was actually Balake's little brother, so at least he didn't do this to a complete stranger. Man, you really gotta appreciate what lengths older brothers go through to torment the little brother. Balake's little brother, you might be watching. But I was there, dude. I know what pain you go through. I have an older brother, too. I know what it's like to be Luigi. I mean, he never swallowed any of my pets. He would just steal my food. He also never let me win in Super Smash Bros. Anytime I was about to win, he would turn off the Nintendo. But I mean, I'm fine. Look how I turned out.
Okay, so I'm just gonna get right into the meat of this topic. I love reading fables. If you weren't paying attention in 10th grade English, a fable is a short story, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end of them. A good way to remember is that the word fable starts with an F, and so does furry. So, some examples of a fable you might have heard are the tortoise and the hare, Humpty Dumpty, Pacific Rim, and the autobiography of Hillary Clinton. This one's a fable because the main character is a bit. I'm just kidding. Humpty Dumpty's not a fable. So there's this guy named Aesop, and he's best known for creating a bunch of fables. He's written over 655, and seriously, I don't know why for some reason we can't find the exact number. How many fables has he written? Over 655! Oh, so 656?
Like, what's the range here?
Unfortunately, he has died, so he won't be writing any more fables. So why can't we get the exact number? Like, what the heck, guys? And he also had a very strong no-photo policy, so no pictures of him were ever taken. because he was born around 500 BC. I don't even think he knew what a camera was, so... Here we go, this is what he supposedly looked like. And what I like most about Fables is that the wording is so, like, Shakespearean and old-timey, and it makes you feel like you're smart for reading these short paragraph-long stories. And even better, they have a moral at the end of them, so once you're done reading, you're like, oh man, that was deep. Like, every single fable can end with one character dropping a microphone. Like, the whole story is just build-up to that one moral moment. Okay, so I'm going to read some of my favorite fables to you guys. I'm not going to read them how Aesop wrote them, though, because he had so many unnecessary smart-sounding words when really all of his fables could be shortened down to, like, 3 sentences. So here we go. Aesop's fables in my own words.
Belling the cat.
So there's these mice that get together, and they're trying to come up with a plan to get this cat to stop killing them. And one mouse is like, oh, we could put a bell around the cat, you know? So now we could hear it or something. And this other mouse is like, yeah, alright, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Who's gonna put the bell on? Okay, so this one's kind of actually stupid. I don't really know what the moral is. Like, maybe no one wants to be the person to sacrifice themselves for the good of humanity or my sanity or... Okay, here's my version of the rest of that story. So after the mouse said that, the other mouse goes, oh, geez, other mouse, you're right. I didn't think of that. Well, I guess I say we all grab our toothpicks and kill the cat. You know, at least that ending made sense. A bell? Pfft. How about you poison it? Or, like, move somewhere where there's not a cat in the first place.
The horse and the groom.
So there's this horse and a groom, which is not the wedding kind. It's an actual groomer, who just calls himself a groom. So this groom spends all this time brushing the horse and making it look pretty. And he also takes some of the horse's oats and sells it for extra cash. Okay, stop right there. Aren't oats supposed to be really cheap? Isn't that a thing? Okay, so the horse is getting malnourished and says, you know, you should really stop worrying about brushing me and more about feeding me. Man, that's deep, I think. The moral is, don't steal your horse's oats. Especially if it talks, like you will never hear the end of it. The farmer with the goose with the golden eggs. So there's this farmer, and he somehow gets a goose that lays golden eggs. And now you might be thinking, what's with all these gooses that lay golden eggs? Jack and the Beanstalk did it. The Simpleton Brothers did it. Well, did you know that this is the very first time a goose laying golden eggs has ever appeared in writing? I actually don't know if that's true. I made it up. I mean, it might be true. I don't know. It was 500 BC, you guys. It was a long time ago. And the goose only lays one egg a day, and the farmer gets greedy and wants more eggs. So he thinks, ah, I bet all the eggs are inside the goose. So he chops up the goose, and guess what? There's only more goose parts in there, not eggs. Okay, so the moral, know how basic things work, especially if you're a farmer and you don't know how geese work, or at least be close friends with someone who knows this. Hey man, I don't think that's how geese work. I mean, I get how you might think this is a magic goose because everything about this is physically impossible, but we could already live pretty decent lives with just one egg a day. Like, we're already in the top 1% now. How can a goose carry around a golden egg inside of itself? Do you know how heavy gold is? If there's solid gold, can a goose ever have babies? This seems like an evolutionary dead end to me. The bat and the weasels. So there once was this bat, and he fell. Somehow. Aesop never really says how it fell. It's a bat. It can fly. Okay, so the bat gets caught by a weasel. Like, one of these things? Okay, so you're saying that a bat gets caught by a weasel because he fell. Whatever, okay. So the weasel says, I am an enemy to all birds, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, I'm not a bird, I'm a mouse. Oh, what are these things that look like wings? Oh, these? That's my blanket. Because I'm cold. Okay, that part wasn't in the story. So the weasel lets him go, but then it happens again with a different weasel, and this weasel says, I am an enemy to mice, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, oh, tiny weasel, but I'm not a mouse. I'm a bird. And then he lets him go. Again. Sometimes Aesop wrote the moral you're supposed to take at the end. He did it with this one, and the moral verbatim is, look and see which way the wind blows before you commit yourself. So are you saying to follow the crowd? Like, go with the flow? That's not really good moral, Aesop. Also, why didn't the bat just say, I'm a bat, losers, and I can fly later? It's also teaching you to make up lies on the spot that contradict your first lie. That's how you get caught lying. Okay, so last fable, the fox and the crow. So this crow has a piece of cheese in her beak, and this fox comes along and is like, oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, I just love your feathers. I wish I could just hear you sing. This crow is now very flattered, and she goes to sing, and then the cheese falls out of her mouth, and the fox eats it. And then the last line, this is beautiful, the fox says, you have a voice, madam. I see. What you want is wits. Moral of the story, everyone wants to steal your cheese. Don't let your guard down for a second. That would be a good t-shirt design. Like, it would say, everyone wants to steal your cheese, and then it would have like a silhouette of a fox and a crow. Someone make that t-shirt. I'll buy it.
I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry.
Hey, James!
Hey! Furby? Everyone's gonna put on $2,000 animal costumes and walk around. Do you wanna come?
No.
But don't let me stop you from this hobby of yours. I may not understand why you like it, but as long as you're not harassing or hurting anyone, or anything, then do whatever makes you happy. Also, shower regularly and eat your vegetables. So, in the last video, I made a haha joke about being a furry. I said, given the choice between an animal with fur and one without fur, that most people would think the animal covered in fur would be cuter. And, ha, if we applied that logic to people, then everyone would be a furry. I got a mixed bag of responses to that joke.
Okay, I was looking at all the comments about James saying he's a furry, and in my opinion, it shouldn't matter. If James is a furry and he told you, that means he trusts you and thinks that you would accept him the way he is. I don't care, I'm not watching him anymore.
Well, that's really nice of you, Mr. Branch. But I still don't trust you. A lot of people were confused, so for the remainder of this video, every time I make a joke, it will be followed by this message. Two muffins are in an oven. One says, boy, it's hot in here. And the other says, yeah, you live in Arizona, what'd you expect? But I'd say for the most part, you guys were very accepting. So that's good to know if I ever do want to come out as something. But if we wanted to talk about someone who is a furry, then look no further than 600 BC. You have to look pretty far.
What am I talking about? I'm talking about this man named Aesop. Aesop. Aesap. Aesuabway.
This man was the world's first furry. Okay, I'm calling him a furry because he wrote a lot of fables with talking animals in them, so I'm making fun of him for writing a lot of furry fanfiction.
I'm making fun of a dead person.
I made a video about a year and a half ago reading some of Aesop's fables, and that video is what this official Odd Ones Out shirt is referencing. Fables are short stories, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end. Characters in fables don't have names. They're just simple, cookie-cutter characters.
You don't have a fable with Michelangelo and Raphael from the Ninja Turtles. No, you have a fable with the tortoise and the other tortoise.
So I'm going to read some more of Aesop's fables, but I'll be focusing on just one character. The fox. The fox gets around. You could pick any animal, and a fable exists with that animal being taken advantage of by a fox. The fox and the triceratops. That fable probably exists. With the amount of fables the fox has been in, you'd expect him to be more moral than Gandhi. Aesop really liked foxes. His fursona was probably a fox.
The fox and the goat.
So once there was this fox eating some cheese, he wasn't looking where he was going, and he fell down a well. The fox had no way of getting out. Then a goat just so happened to be walking by and said, hey, what are you doing down there, you silly goose?
Actually, I'm a fox, said the fox.
I was just drinking some of this lovely water.
Is it good?
Oh, it's only the best water in the entire universe. So the goat decided to jump down and join the fox. But then the fox used the goat. He used her as a stepping stool to get out of the well.
The website I'm reading this from has an interactive picture that shows the events that happened. Let's watch.
So then the goat says, whoa, buckaroo, aren't you gonna help me out?
No.
Instead, I'm gonna teach you a moral. If you had as much sense as you have beard, you would have been more cautious about finding a way to get out again before you jumped in. Look before you leap, you stupid idiot. Okay, goodbye. But Fox, you fell into the well too. You were the one not looking. The goat looked, you just lied to her. And you got away with it. So the real moral of the story is, you can abuse the people in your life with no consequences, as long as they end up dead in a well. The Fox and the Crab. This fable is pretty short. Once there was a crab who was tired of living next to sand, so he decided to move to a meadow.
And then a fox ate him. That's the real fable!
It counted as one of Aesop's 665. And the moral is, be content with your lot. Don't move, don't travel, don't try and live in a better location because a fox might eat you! Just live in your studio apartment and deal with it! The lion, the bear, and the fox. This baby goat, he's a kid, went up to a lion and a bear and said, "Have you seen my mom? I haven't seen her in a couple of weeks. She said she was going to get some water and a pack of smokes, and she hasn't come home." But the bear and the lion didn't care. They started fighting each other over who would get to eat the baby goat. And then a fox jumped out of the bushes, killed the kid, and ran off with it. I wonder how much Aesop got paid for these. Again, the website has a very nifty interactive picture that shows you exactly what occurred. And the moral of the story? Those who have all the toil do not always get the profit. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Seems to me the moral should be, don't talk to lions and bears, and watch out for foxes. The fox and the grapes. Basically what happens in this fable was that once there were some grapes growing on a really tall tree. Do grapes grow on really tall trees? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And the fox really wanted some of the grapes. Do foxes like grapes? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And so he tried to get them himself, but he couldn't reach them. And since the fox didn't want to ask for help, probably because all the other animals hated him, he said, "Eh, I didn't want your sour grapes anyway." There are many who pretend to despise and belittle that which is beyond their reach. Which is where I think the phrase, money is the root of all evil, came from. People were upset that they couldn't get money, so they just said, "Eh, I didn't want your evil money anyway." Okay, here's the last fable. This one's kinda sad. The fox and the scorpion. So the fox, this whole time, had been gathering ingredients to make the perfect sandwich. He got the meat from an orphaned goat, a sautéed depressed crab, and some cheese. He was also going to get a side of grapes, but he decided to go without them. When all of a sudden, a scorpion comes up to him and said, "Hey, can I get a ride across the river? I'm too small to swim across." "Ha! Nice try, Slick! If I gave you a ride, you'd just sting me." "No, if I did that, we'd both drown. It would be a lose-lose." "Alright, I'll help you out. I've been acting like a huge jerk lately, all to make this one sandwich. But I'm gonna change starting now. For once, I'm gonna be helpful." So the fox gives the scorpion a ride, when all of a sudden... "Ah, why'd you sting me?"
"Because I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature."
"Yeah, but you're a talking scorpion. I thought you'd have enough cognitive sense to know not to do that.
You even said yourself that if you stung me, we'd both die."
"Actually, I can hold my breath for 6 days."
"What?"
"Yeah, watch.
My sandwich."
And then the fox died. He had no family, no friends, and no sandwich. And that's why you never help scorpions.
I just lied to you guys! I pranked you! This fable wasn't the fox and the scorpion, it's actually the frog and the scorpion. The fox never got stung. He knows better than to help out another creature. Fox is too busy looking out for number one, baby! The frog's dead, though. And if it makes you happy, the scorpion died, too. And the fox got to enjoy his sandwich. Still alone, but... the end! Man, what a plot twist! Aren't I so good at telling stories? So what did we learn, children? We learned, don't ask for help, don't help out others... lie to people, take what you want, and you'll succeed.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that you, yes, you watching this right now, are an introvert. How do I know this? Because you're watching YouTube videos instead of being outside.
What are you doing on the computer? Go outside, so beautiful!
Don't worry, I'm an introvert too. I got an email from an 8-year-old once. He said he liked my videos. It was one of the worst emails I ever got. So I'm just gonna briefly explain what introvert means to all the 8-year-olds watching this.
Hey, kids! Are you ready to learn? An introvert is a person who doesn't really like to play with other kids. This doesn't make them sad that they're lonely. They just would rather play by themselves. Think of it this way. Has your friend ever asked you to play with them, but you didn't really want to, so you asked your mom to make up a reason for you not to go? If so, then you're probably an introvert. Or you just need better friends. Me and my mom had a code word, so if a friend was on the phone who wanted to hang out, I would say,
Let me ask my mom. And when I asked her if I said the code word, it meant, Mom, make up an excuse so I can't go. I'm not going to say the code word because I still plan on using it. I actually made a comic kind of similar to this back in 2014, and it's one of my most popular comics, so thanks for liking it. Obviously, it would be one of my most popular comics. I mean, look how great it is. Michael, the creator of Vsauce... Hey, Vsauce! Michael here. Has this new YouTube Red show called Minefield. And as of right now, it's the best YouTube Red series. And in the first episode, Michael goes into an isolation room for 3 days. He has no technology, he's all by himself for 3 days. When I first saw this, I thought, hey, maybe I should try that. Yeah, 3 days of nothing but your own thoughts. I can think of comic ideas, I can write a book, and I don't even have to write any of these ideas down because everything I say is being recorded. This could be my next vacation. Also, speaking of YouTube Red, hey Susan, I heard you had a new spot open for a Red series. I have this great idea called YouTuber Swap. It's like Wife Swap, but with YouTubers. Just hit me up if you're interested. Now, don't get the wrong idea that I'm someone who hates people. I don't. It's just, if we're strangers, then I'd rather not talk to you. Unless you're a stranger who's a fan of my videos. Okay, we can talk about me all day. Bringing up a point from the last video, don't be afraid to talk to me. You know, every YouTuber is in a weird position with their fans because if you meet me, you already have a pretty good idea of who I am as a person. For instance, you know how long I wet the bed, but for me, I have no clue how long you wet the bed. So, what are we talking about? I'm okay with having a conversation with people, okay? It's just that I'm never the one who starts the conversation. But again, this doesn't apply to fans. I like to think that I'm decent with conversation, but I don't really know how good I am at it. I did fail public speaking. But on occasion, there are times when it's awkward not to talk to a stranger. One time in my college years, I got on an elevator to go to a class and another person got on with me. I live a pretty crazy life, I know. And I did what anyone should do in that situation. I didn't say anything to the other person. But then when we got on our floor, you know how the elevator doors are supposed to open? Well, this time, it didn't. The doors didn't open. This is an introvert's worst nightmare, by the way. And it wasn't one of those elevators that you could fit a king-size bed into. This elevator was about the size of a red box. Is the door gonna open? It seems like it should open by now. What do you do in that situation? You can't not talk to the person you're now trapped with. So, what class are you going to? Physics? Oh, that makes sense, because this is a science building. Enough time had passed where we started looking up the school's number to tell them that we were stuck, which is what you're supposed to do, right? There's not, like, a button on the elevator that you can press to call for help, right? But luckily, while we were doing that, for whatever reason, after a solid 2 minutes, the door decided to open. And just the wave of relief that went over me and this kid. Oh, I thought we'd be in there for hours!
I hope I never see you again.
Same. And that's why I'm never going in an elevator again. It's too risky. I think the problem I have is that I'm bad at starting conversations. Normally, if I'm talking to someone who I don't know, I'll ask, so, how was your day? But if your day was anything but good, I don't want to hear it. My dog died. Yeah, they do that. Why is starting a conversation so hard? I only know like 3 good conversation starters. The first one is, how was your day? And if that doesn't work, I start talking about all this crazy weather we're having. And in Arizona, there's really only one weather. Hot. Although it did rain like 2 weeks ago. And lastly, if I have nothing else to ask, I hit them with a really hard question. What color is your toothbrush? Mine's red. To start a conversation, sometimes people will ask, what's your favorite blank? I have nothing against these types of questions. I think it tells you a lot about the person you're talking to. But there's one form of this question that I really hate. And it's the question, what's your favorite candy bar? And I hate this question because my favorite candy bar, and I will stick by my answer no matter what you think, is M&M's. That's not a candy bar. Ow! What an astute observation! I'm a very simple man, alright? I like my chocolate pure. Sometimes when people ask this, I think, I should just say Twix. People won't get mad if I say Twix. But then I remember, screw Twix, I like M&M's. But James, why don't you just say Hershey's bar? Because Hershey's makes a mess on your hands and they don't come in a convenient bite-sized pieces, while M&M's hard outer shell improves their overall texture. Why am I even having this argument? I had a friend tell me, well, James, I really like Smarties, but I know they're not a bar, so I don't say they're my favorite candy bar. First of all, dude, Smarties? Really? That's your favorite candy? And second of all, the person asking the question honestly doesn't care what my answer is. Why are you asking such a specific question? You're excluding so much other candy. Candy bars are exclusively chocolate. What if my favorite candy isn't chocolate? What if it's Smarties? Whoa, did you guys see what I just did there? I was talking about M&Ms for like a whole minute. I was having a conversation. All because I was arguing why M&Ms are my favorite candy bar. So that's it. That's how you talk to people. You disagree with everything they say and then argue about it. So everyone watching, argue about your favorite candy bar down in the comments.
So I was sitting in the doctor chair because I was about to donate blood, because I do that, and I was thinking, ugh, the next video is like 6 minutes long. That's twice as long as my other videos. I need to come up with a super short video to keep my viewers quen. So I was sitting in the recovery room eating my pretzels. You know, okay, what happened to the good food you'd get when you donated blood? I remember a year ago when I started donating, they had fruit snacks and double stuffed Oreos and apple juice. Now it's like, here's some water and some pretzels. You're a real hero, you know? Like, that was one of the main reasons I donated blood. Oh, you saved so many lives. Thank you. Yeah. Just give me my Oreos. Like, if I was roommates with Dracula and he offered to cook me a meal, like a good tasting meal for a cup of my blood, I would accept it in a heartbeat. I mean, not every day, obviously. Maybe like every Friday. So this all happened about an hour ago. Well, probably like 2 days ago when this video comes out. And if you're watching it a year from now, it happened about a year ago. So sorry if I don't sound as animated as usual. So it is entirely possible that someone watching this has my blood in them. And I think that makes us related by blood. So I got into the blood donation business because my dad has O negative blood, which is the universal donor blood. They keep O negative blood on ambulances because O negative can give to everyone. There's no blood tests needed, but I'm O positive, which is the most common blood type. So I'm not special. One time I was in a child development class, and I don't know how the topic came up, but my table started talking about blood types. And I said, oh, I'm O positive. And this girl across from me says, oh, I forget mine, but my doctor said I'm the universal donor. And I said, oh, that means you're O negative. And then the teacher walks by and's like, oh, you're talking about blood types? What are you, girl? And she says, O neg. She said, oh, neg. Like, so many people have asked her what her blood type is, and she didn't want to waste her time any more than she had to by saying, a TIV. You didn't even know what your blood type was until I said it. And then, I don't remember why, but she got her donor card out of her purse, and it says what blood type you have, and she says, huh, on here it says I have O positive. So I guess O positive is the universal donor. And you know those moments where you want to argue with someone because you're so obviously right, but you just don't care enough and you don't want to talk to the person any longer than you have to? You know those moments? So I go, oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Let's pretend you get on a bus and it's super crowded. The only spot that's open is between two strangers. So you sit down between two people you never met and everyone is fine. Everyone's keeping to themselves, no one's making eye contact, it's perfect. Sure, your shoulders are touching, but that's just what happens. That's part of the bus going experience, you poor person. But then at the very next stop, aisle seat guy gets off. So now you and window seat guy are sitting right next to each other. But since you're in the middle, you have to be the one to decide, do you move or not? I honestly don't know what the right thing to do in that situation is. I'm conflicted. Because if you move, it would be silently telling the other person, hey, you're disgusting. I can't stand having our shoulders touch any longer, and I'm glad to finally get away from you. Ugh. But on the other hand, if I was the window seat guy, I would want the middle seat guy to become the new aisle seat guy. I wouldn't see moving as rude. I would just want his gross, disgusting body as far away from me as possible. That's not rude. But on the other hand, maybe I'm overthinking everything and most people don't even mind being this close to another human and they aren't struggling socially, I don't know. Now imagine that same situation, but with urinals. If you're in the middle urinal, do you move halfway through to the other urinal? Because I would. Are you supposed to talk to people when you're sitting 2 inches away from them? I always felt like I should say something, like, hey, did you see the game last night? I didn't, I was too busy drawing cartoons. But I realized that this is a two-way street. I'm worried about not talking to someone, but they're not talking to me either. We both agreed that there's this unwritten contract between us that we're not even going to look at each other. It got me thinking about strangers and specifically how I treat them. And how I can make money off of them. Hey-oh! I'm just kidding. That was a joke. For most of my life, I would go out of my way to avoid talking to people. I would stay in my lane, mind my own business, no eye contact. If everyone's using a urinal, I'd have to pee tomorrow. Yes, I'm lonely. But now that YouTube's the thing, I'm interacting with strangers more often than I've had to in my entire life. So I've been thinking a lot about strangers. And first of all, I think the word stranger is already an insulting label for someone just because you don't know their name. Oh, I don't know this person. They're a stranger. They're strange. I'm the normal one. They're the freaks. They probably murder people with an axe.
That's always the go-to profession of a stranger, an axe murderer. But the people you see throughout your day are all humans with their own hopes and dreams, and some of them may hope to kill you, but you'll never know because you didn't ever take the time to get to know them. So I think that the people you see throughout your daily life aren't strangers. They're potential friends. Except for the weird ones, obviously. Stay away from them. And yes, I'm telling you to judge people based on their appearance. They're the ones that chose to wear anime shirts in public, okay? So back to the bus scenario. I'm sitting right next to this fellow human being. So far, there's not a single reason why I should dislike this person. But I don't know why, if you put him and me on a bus next to each other, I want him as far away from me as possible. Just stop touching my shoulder! So that was the last time I took the bus. Unfortunately, that's not the only place you meet strangers. One time I was at Home Depot, and I was looking for jumper cables, and I couldn't find them anywhere. And I don't know if I'm the only human that's like this, but I will try everything in my power to not talk to a sales associate. I guess it's because I know they get paid minimum wage, and their life sucks, and I just want to leave them alone and not make their job any harder than it has to be. But asking employees for help isn't even bothering them that much. In fact, I think it's part of their job? Like, what's the worst thing they're gonna say? Ugh! You don't know where one specific item is? Everyone else knows. Did you even look? They're in the jumper cable aisle, idiot. No one's gonna think that. So feeling desperate, I mustered up what little courage I had and swaggered up to someone wearing an orange vest and said, excuse me, do you know where the jumper cables are?
I don't work here.
Oh, you don't work here? And then he walked away.
And then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. And then the very next day, bum, bum, bum.
So I think the logical thing to do in that situation would have been to find someone who does work there. But I left the store because I didn't want to run into that same guy again. But I also bought a hammer because I didn't want people to think that I stole something. So...
oh, yeah.
And by the way, if you wear an orange vest to Home Depot, just expect people to ask you for help. Same goes for people who wear red shirts at Target. You'd think I'd learn from my mistakes, but no, I have a bunch more examples. When my book came out, my publisher said that it was going to be carried at Barnes & Noble, and I thought that was super duper cool and wanted to see my book in the wild. Not to buy or anything, just to have a look at. So I took my friend Adam from Something Else YT, and we went to the local Barnes & Noble and started our search. We looked in the humor section, didn't find it. Then we checked the new release section, it wasn't there either. Then we looked at the best-selling section, then the religious section, but we couldn't find the book anywhere. So either the publisher lied, or they had already sold out. But just to be sure, I asked one of the workers, hey, do you guys have a book by The Odd Ones Out? He kind of looks like this. And the worker typed something out on his computer and said, oh yeah, we got those in the back, we just haven't put them out yet. So then he went to the back room, brought out a copy and handed it to me saying, here you go, kid. And I thought, well, frick. I can't just hand it back to the guy and say, oh no, that's okay. I didn't want to buy it. I just wanted to have a look at it. Do you know how inconvenient that would be? So the only less awkward option I could think of was to buy my own book. And you know what? I'd get a couple cents back from this purchase, so it wouldn't have been a total loss. But Adam, being the more sensible one, said,
dude, this is ridiculous. You have to come clean.
So then he went to the worker and said,
so he actually wrote this book. He just wanted to get a look at it, like, in the wild.
And the worker said, oh, that's so cool. Do you want to sign our copies? And then I thought, well, hold on. You're not even going to ask me for my ID? How do you know I actually wrote this book and I'm not some guy trying to deface someone else's? And then the guy gave me a whole stack of my books and I signed them all. Last story before I go. I was in the hallway of a building and me and this potential friend crossed paths. He said, hello. And I was going to respond with, hello, and how's it going? But I combined the two and ended up saying, how? And then I jumped out a window and fell to my death. I can't rationalize that behavior. Maybe I spend too much time on the computer and I'm not used to looking at real people's faces, but I'm trying to change. Don't get me wrong, going to conventions and meeting fans has helped me a lot with talking to people. Granted, those conversations are usually one-sided and a real stranger won't already know who I am, but they've still helped me. Now, you might be expecting me to give you advice on overcoming social anxiety, but if you watch this video, you know I'm not the most qualified to give that advice, but I'll try my best. I know it's hard to feel confident and I'm still working on it, but you have to understand that we're all people and we all have things that we're struggling with. And in reality, we're not all watching or caring about every little thing that other people do. We're all too busy worrying about what other people think of us. So with enough practice and believing in yourself, you can show the world your true colors and,
I think you'll find that people are a lot nicer than you think. So if you're the middle seat guy on the bus and you have to decide whether or not to move, do whatever you want. No one cares. Just stop touching my shoulders.
And publish.
A 23-minute long movie review about an 80s puppet movie sure is different than the content I usually post. And even though it was a lot of work, it was fun to try something new, and I think the video turned out pretty good. Am I right, Chamberlain Funko Pop? Well, it's a good thing I'll never, ever have to worry about this franchise ever again.
Are you sure about that?
When I made a review about a cult classic puppet movie that came out 35 years ago, the last thing I was expecting was that said franchise would get a reboot announced 2 weeks after I posted. And every single day since then, people have been tweeting at me saying, "Hey James, did you know Netflix is making a Dark Crystal series?" Yes, I know. Do you know who you're talking to? If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, then I recommend you watch my video, The Movie That Was Too Scary for Baby James. In that video, I reviewed a scary kids movie called The Dark Crystal. The movie was more or less a passion project of Jim Henson, the creator of The Muppets, and so this movie was done entirely with puppets. It came out before I was born, but I still somehow watched it and got scarred for life. In my review, I said some good things about the movie, like I thought it was a very creative and artistic film, but I, also said some negative things about it, too. As YouTubers, sometimes we forget that our videos are public and can be viewed by anyone. And when we talk about companies, we can forget that real people are attached to those properties who have poured hundreds of hours into these projects, and there's a chance they'll see our videos. And unbeknownst to me, Lisa Henson, current CEO of the Henson Company, saw my video. And for some reason, I never considered that was ever going to happen. If I had known that Lisa frickin' Henson was gonna watch my video, I probably would have worded a few things differently. I don't think she was too mad at my video, though, because she invited me to tour the Henson office, and I got to see a real-life Skeksis puppet, which resurfaced an unhealthy amount of repressed memories, and I got to meet some of the puppeteers, which was a whole lot of fun. Also, before Age of Resistance was released, I got contacted by Netflix, and they invited me and some other Dark Crystal fans to an early screening of the first two episodes, and I signed a non-disclosure agreement so I couldn't spoil anything. I don't remember when that NDA said I was allowed to talk about it again, but hopefully I'm in the clear. When I was in the early screening, I just remember thinking about how cool that these characters in this world were back on the big screen. Netflix has a pretty big screen. And the puppetry and cinematography have only gotten better. And the fact that 95% of everything was done with practical effects and puppets, it's beautiful! There's not a single human in this series, except in episode 10 when this puppeteer's head can be seen for a couple frames. I just checked and they actually took it out, so I still saw it. So much time and care and hard work was put into this series that there was a documentary made about how hard it was to make this series. If any of you are wondering, no, Reunip does not make an appearance in Age of Resistance, nor is there a naked baby Jen puppet. Also, if you're worried that the show wasn't going to be as dark and scary as the original, don't worry. It's darker and scarier than the original. The Netflix family Twitter account was nice enough to timestamp every scary part in the series, and as you can see, stuff goes down in episode 10. Surprisingly, though, they didn't blacklist the scene of the Skeksis peeing out of three different pee streams in episode 6 at 28 minutes and 41 seconds. Really makes you think. So, artistically, this series is beautiful, and it needs to do well because it's left open for a season 2, and I want a season 2 to get greenlit. I'm not going to do a plot summary of the whole thing like I did in the first review because I don't want this video to be an hour long, and you should watch it for yourself. I'm not just going to do everything for you, I'm not your mom. But there are some things you should know before you go watching the series. This is kinda spoilery, but I won't spoil that much. So this alien planet is home to these creatures called Gelflings. They can share memories with each other by holding hands, and the girl Gelflings have wings. There's also this other creature called Agura, who's been around since the beginning of the world. She's basically Yoda's sassy grandma. And then out of nowhere, these tree aliens visit. Stay with me here. And they crack this very important crystal, and in doing so, they split into two different creatures. Their goodness becomes this thing called a mystic, who are dumb, and their bad side become these cool bird monsters called Skeksis, and then the Skeksis took over the entire world, so whoops. None of this is explained in the original movie, and it's not explained in the series until episode 7, but I think that the tree alien backstory should have started the series. Which is why I just spoiled it for you. The original 90-minute film already had so much lore, and this new Netflix reboot just added even more lore? There's even a character named Lore? How much lore is there? Speaking of names, there are a lot of made-up words in this series, and sometimes those made-up words are hard to remember. Within the first minute of Age of Resistance, the narrator tells us that there are seven clans of Skellflint, but then only names three, because there are only three important ones that we should care about. I don't even know the names of the other four clans, and I'm like a Dark Crystal aficionado. Also, there are like 10 evil bird monsters, all with names like Skexo, Skexil, Skektek, and Shrek. Granted, most of the time they go by their more common names like Chamberlain or the Emperor, but gosh dang it, I can't even remember some of those names. That's the pussy one, and that's the one that made that weird face in the original movie, and that's the one whose voice does not sound like a Skeksis at all.
Now, what vexes you, child?
Another thing you should know is that I thought this series was pretty slow. Maybe it's because I'm impatient, or I'm used to watching YouTube videos at 2x speeds exclusively, but do you remember in the original movie how there was a scene where the Skeksis ate dinner for 2 whole minutes, and visually it was amazing, but the whole time you're thinking, yeah, I get it. Well, there are a lot of scenes like that in the series. Let's take the beginning of episode 2, for example. It starts with a character we've never seen before waking up and putting on his shoes and making porridge and then spilling the porridge on his shirt and brushing his hair, then roughing it up, then grabbing his cleaning supplies.
And it's just a whole minute of this unnamed character getting ready for his day. It's just so poor. Just cut it, please.
And it wouldn't be that bad if this was the only example, but trust me, there are plenty of examples. I just don't want to spoil any of them for you. Turning a 90-minute movie into a 9-hour TV series, you're going to have some filler or some scenes that don't necessarily drive the plot forward. I get that. Luckily, I found this Chrome plugin that lets you watch Netflix at 2x speed, so
it's all good.
Making this video has got me thinking about prequels and how tricky they are to do right. In the original movie, there are only 2 Gelflings left in the entire world, so a prequel that sets up a world with 7 different Gelfling clans, we as an audience know that something's gonna happen, and it ain't gonna look good for the Gelfling. The series also added this MacGuffin Halo sword-looking thing that was supposed to save the world, but the whole time watching that, I kept thinking, no, that's not how the world is saved. The world's not saved until 1982. Also, there are certain characters that we know can't die because they're in the original movie, but boy does this show make you think some OG characters are gonna die. It almost makes me wish that the writers used the 80s Dark Crystal movie as inspiration and rebooted the series in its own separate universe. Movie reviewers tend to focus a lot on the negatives, and I don't want to come off as a hater because I really did enjoy this series and I want a season 2 to get made, so let's end this video with some of the things I liked about this series. I like that we got to see the Skeksis with more personality because they were always so over-the-top evil. The Hunter Skeksis was just on a whole new level of cool. All the other Skeksis never came across as threatening. Like look how slow they walk. I could beat them up. But the Hunter Skeksis, oh man, he was awesome. Do you think he'll be my friend? I like that the series didn't tone down the darkness, and if anything, they amplified it, because everyone like me should have a deep-seated fear of puppets. There are some great nods to the original Dark Crystal, like when the Emperor Skeksis says,
I will never be dust!
But we all know that's the very first thing he does in the original movie. Celadon is a piece of garbage and does not deserve a redemption arc. The voice acting is amazing. There are a lot of talented people voicing these characters, like Luke Skywalker. A YouTuber named Barnaby Dixon, who made these very cool mantis finger puppets, got to work on a scene where the puppets put on a mini puppet show. And that was everything I liked about Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. So, in conclusion, if you have 9 hours of free time, download the Video Speed Controller plugin, set that bad boy to 2, and save yourself 4.5 hours. But do watch Age of Resistance. Also, executives, if you still need someone to play Rayonip... Hello. Hey. Recently, I read the worst YouTube comment ever, and I can't stop thinking about it. This comment lives in my head completely rent-free. It lives in its own private penthouse. The comment was concerning my upload schedule, and it was, if anime studios can make an episode of anime in 1 week, then these YouTubers can make a video in a month. Initially, I reacted like, you think that's how this works? You think anime studios post an episode and go, great work, team!
Well, time to make the next episode this week. Hope none of you have any plans. I know the working conditions in Japan are bad, but sheesh. I guess all the animators are just slacking off between seasons then, huh? And as I thought about it more, I realized, I can't get too mad. This person is just uneducated about the animation industry and is probably a minor. And then I thought, hey, I know a bit about animation behind the scenes. Maybe I could talk about being an artist and educate people on the animation pipeline. So that way, I won't get any more uneducated comments. For this video, when I say artist, I'm going to be talking about the Google definition of an artist. Noun, a person who produces paintings or drawings as a profession or hobby. You know, the pen and paper artists. I'm not really going to be talking about artists who make music or birthday cakes or take black and white photos of sunsets because I want to talk about cartoons. I make cartoons. Now, it should come to no surprise that I'm pro-artist. Well, not a pro-artist. Are you kidding? I know my skill level. I still can't draw fingers. What I'm saying is, I will support anyone who wants to make art. If you're making art as a hobby, then that's a really great creative outlet, and having something physical as an end result is incredibly rewarding. But if you want to turn making art into a full-time job, you might want to sit down and consider a few things. Like, are you sure you don't want to go to law school? The biggest challenge all artists face is they have to eat food to survive. And in this capitalist society, food costs money. So artists are challenged to somehow take being good at making shapes and turn that into money. I know of four ways an artist can make a living. The first way is to be so good at art that people will pay money to hang it up in their house. The second option is to make caricature drawings at beaches and tourist traps. The third option is to sell your plasma. And the fourth option, which is the most common option, is to make drawings that people will pay you to make. And do a little bit of option three on the side. Some artists will take commissions, which is basically an artist going, "Hey, I'll draw whatever you want, asterisks, for $100. And people will go, "What the f***? Art should be free! I was going to give you so much exposure to my 50 Twitter followers!" Or people will go, "I want you to draw this cute animal character I made, and while at first your price might seem a bit high to the uneducated, I understand that art is a time-consuming process and you need to eat too. So here's a crisp 100. But another somewhat more stable idea is that artists will get jobs at studios or work for a YouTuber and will be like, "Hey, we'll give you money if you draw specifically what we want, and if we don't like your art, we'll make sure to communicate clearly what we would like changed and work as a team to do the best we can. Or you're fired!" And that leads us into animation. An important thing to remember for animation is that drawings equal time plus money. Exactly how much time? Well, to answer that one commenter's question, no, an anime studio does not make an episode of anime in 1 week. I think. South Park is what making an episode in a week looks like. And truthfully, that's very impressive. I take months trying to figure out what the heck I'm even going to talk about. Making a single episode of a cartoon from scratch takes about 2 years. Don't believe me? Well, let's see what Yakko from the 2020 Animaniacs has to say in the very first episode. At least, we still think there's a President Trump. You see, the writers are writing this in 2018. Now that doesn't mean it took 26 years to make the first season of the Animaniacs. There's a lot of moving parts that happen when producing an animated TV series. For starters, the whole season of the show gets made at the same time. While the writers are writing episode 12, the storyboard team is boarding episode 3, and the design team is designing the bowling shoes that are going to be worn in episode 6. And it's someone's entire job to make sure that everyone's doing their job. This is called the animation pipeline. And there's so many other departments that I could honestly make a whole other video about this pipeline. If you're interested, I'll do it. But just know that it takes roughly 2 years to make a season of a cartoon show, and that's why when shows reference memes, they're extremely outdated. You know, like a boss! It's beautiful, isn't it? This exterior nighttime city skyline background. This background was drawn by one of my background artists, Annie Loomis, and it took 7 hours to make. And it was used specifically for this clip. If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too. It lasted for 4 seconds. 7 hours of work, 4 seconds of content. So before we continue, I'm going to make you all sit and appreciate this background for another 4 seconds so I can double the value of this background.
backgrounds can be a time-consuming process, and the whole purpose of them is to be in the back of the ground. They're not even the focus. So storyboarders will sketch out a scene to set the staging through layout, posing, and character expression. And during this phase, I'm trying to find places where I can reuse backgrounds or take pieces of other backgrounds and Frankenstein monster them together to make an entirely new background. Like how I used the city background to be outside this window. Or how I took the buildings from this background, the bushes from this background, and the bench from this background and made an entirely new background. And hopefully, none of you noticed. Am I being cheap? Or cutting corners? Absolutely, but that's the point. That gives another background artist more time to make something else, like this James-themed city skyline. Instead of having to draw 20 different backgrounds of a bedroom, we already have a bedroom, let's just do something else, please! It's not being lazy, it's getting the most use, the most mileage out of your hard work. I see this next story pop up on Twitter about every month, and it makes me want to stab my eyes out. If you look at this scene from The Jungle Book and this scene from Winnie the Pooh, these two similarly proportioned boys are eerily moving in the exact same way. Wait, was this plagiarized? Did someone from Winnie the Pooh plagiarize The Jungle Book? No. Remember what I said about drawings equal time plus money? Well, back in the old days of animation, before fancy graphics cards and floppy disks, animation frames had to be physically painted onto floppy, transparent sheets called cells. So animated movies were essentially a really long flipbook with over 100,000 hand-drawn painted pages. Back then, drawings equaled even more time and even more money. This whole sequence had to not only be drawn 24 times a second, but it also had to have the correct timing to look like a little boy was jumping on rocks. Just because you drew 24 Mowglis doesn't mean they're gonna look good when you play the frames together. So if you're making a cartoon movie in the 70s and you need a scene where a young boy character is just being a dude and throwing rocks, and you need a really climactic fight scene, are you gonna spend the time and money drawing another boy throwing another rock when someone else already did that 10 years ago? Or are you gonna reuse the animation the studio already made and then have more time and budget to make an even epicker fight scene? If these movies were from two different studios, then yes, that would be a completely different story. But Disney owns this movement of our boy Mowgli, so they're allowed to use that movement on our boy Chris. Turning your art into a full-time job is very difficult. I'm extremely lucky to not only have this opportunity, but to be able to build an amazing team of talented artists to create these cartoons and share them with you. And because of you watching these videos and supporting me, I'm able to reinvest money into the team so we can make better quality content and I can support more artists. It's a win-win symbiotic thing we got going on. So if you ever wanted to get into the art industry, good luck, get drawing, and start putting that portfolio together. As some of you may know, Jaden has already made a video about the Scribble Showdown tour me, her, Domix, Ross, and Aaron went on in 2019. But we toured again, baby, last November! We were scheduled to go earlier, but then something came up. For this round of touring, we did more than double the amount of shows than last time, so that means this video will be twice as good as Jaden's. So, touring during a global pandemic was a lot of fun. Anytime we had a day off, everyone on the crew had to take a rapid test, and people coming to the shows needed a proof of vaccine to get inside, and worst of all, we weren't able to say hi to people after the show. I know a lot of people waited outside in the cold for us to come out, only to see us at a distance load ourselves into the bus in our PJs, going, "Sorry! We're not allowed! We have to stay in our bubble!" Before the tour even started, we had a big problem. Domix couldn't get his Canadian visa approved to come work in the US, so he was unable to tour with us. But luckily, we found a sub for Dom, someone who loved maple syrup just as much as Dom and was willing to drop everything and tour with us for a whole month, Emily from the channel Emerichu. And she killed it on stage. Like, straight up murder. She was super funny, artistic, and she drew these awesome pictures of all of us and just... I'm not crying, shut up! When Ross met Emily, the very first thing he said to her was, "Hello, touring's going to be so fun. Just don't sleep the wrong way on the bus, because if it crashes, you'll break your neck and die painfully. Also, you're not allowed to poop on the bus." I would know. Fortunately, no one pooped or broke their neck during the whole tour. And I still haven't pooped. Your body adapts to crazy things. During the last tour, Ross couldn't control his bowels, but this time, he couldn't control his brain.
He had what he describes as intense, debilitating nightmares that felt like a Nintendo 64 rumble pack was added to the experience. And if you want to hear more about what Ross's twisted mind thought up of when he was unconscious, then go check out the video he made on his channel. But not now, because I'm talking. So, on this tour, I wanted to be better at taking photos. You know, the reason I don't have a vlogging channel is because I forget to film anything that happens on my trips. And as I was taking a photo of a venue, I found out that my phone could do something called Photosphere. Photospheres are full 360-degree photos that show you everything at every angle. Here's a picture of the venue, and here's what the ground looked like. They're the superior way of taking photos. I took a photosphere of every venue. Hey, you know what else is round and cool? That's a great question. It's the type of question we got asked in our VIP Q&A panel. Before every show, the five of us would go out and do a Q&A panel for the people who bought VIP tickets. And 93.75% of the Q&As were absolutely fine. One time, someone asked a question that was directed at their fiancé, and it was, "Will you marry me?"
Oh, I'm gonna take a photosphere of this. Hold on, you'll need to stay still for like 2 minutes.
I wish that question was directed at me. I would have loved to kiss someone on tour. Anyways, one of the cues we got was a little odd. I'm not gonna tell you which show this was at, but it was in Florida, because of course it was. There was one guy in the audience wearing a suit who was reaching his hand so high up that his butt was out of his chair and he was visibly shaking with excitement. So given how urgent this guy was being, Aaron called on him, but now we know not to call on those types of people. You in the suit. The guy stands up screaming, "Yes! Thank you!" And he goes on a long-winded explanation saying, "Look, I'm 26 years old, I'm not getting any younger, I want to do what you do!"
Okay. What's your question?
My question is that I want to make a bet with all of you that in 1 year I'm going to be up on stage with you performing at Scribble Showdown! I wanted to say, "I bet $1 million because they're not holding auditions." But instead, I said, "I love your enthusiasm. That's great. But don't quantify your success into a certain time frame, because that's only going to set yourself up for failure. Especially on the internet, growing an audience takes time and luck. Nothing is ever guaranteed." And we told him good luck and started answering other cues. And then at the end of the Q&A, as we were walking off stage, the guy screamed out, "See you in a year!" And that made me upset because he didn't listen to anything I just said. To his credit, he'll definitely be remembered. Not in the way he wants to, but remembered. And he's coming on tour with us next year, so, you know, be on the lookout for that. Another fun fan interaction that happened was in the freezing state of Chicago. We arrived in Chicago a day early, so me and Emily decided to walk to The Bean. Now, I have been told that The Bean is not called The Bean, and the artist actually wants it to be called something else. So as we walked up to The Bean, I kept chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." I took some photospheres, and as we started to leave, we passed another group who were chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." And I thought, wow, those guys are annoying. But then they made eye contact with me through The Bean's reflection and were like, "Oh my god, are you James?" And I said, "Who?" And then someone saw Emily and said, "Oh my god, it's Jaden!" And I started laughing, and I pointed to my Scribble Showdown jacket. "No, no, no, it's this one, not this one, this one." But I don't think they understood, because when we were taking a group photo, one of them said, "Jaden should go in front." And I said, "Yeah, Jaden, come over here." So on the last tour, Aaron had just gotten into Magic the Gathering, which is a card game I've been playing longer than him. Back then, I had to explain some of the rules and show him the pro gamer strats. But during 2019 to 2021, Aaron got really into Magic. He knows the name of every single card and what it does. Like, I'll pull a card from a pack and he'll be like, "Oh, nice, Branching Evolution. That's like a worse doubling season. But you could combo it with the Colossal Dreadmaw and the Truffle Mixer. No, the Truffle Mater, and get Gary out in turn 5. Gary's what the community calls the Gray Apostle." What? At one of the venues we stayed at, I noticed that there was a random 2 of diamonds glued to the ceiling. So I says to Aaron, "Hey Aaron, say a card, any card."
7 of clubs.
No, lower.
3 of clubs.
Lower.
2 of clubs.
Okay, now change the suit.
2 of diamonds.
Now, you chose that card, right?
Okay.
Look up. What?
But then Aaron bought a deck of playing cards and performed a card trick that forced someone to pick the two of diamonds, and then Aaron would tell them to look up saying, "Is that your card?" What? And because of that, Aaron started to learn other card tricks and would try them out on people. So I don't want to take any credit for Aaron's hobbies, but I totally got him into magic, and I got him into magic. While we were on tour, we got invited to be a part of Jacksepticeye's hashtag ThankMiss livestream that was raising money to build homeless shelters. And on stream, Aaron had this crazy idea that if we reached our goal, he would kiss one of us. And then we reached our goal, and then nothing notable happened. If this show sounds like a lot of fun and you want to come see all of us play drawing games live, and you live in Europe, then great news! We have a Europe tour scheduled for April. Get your tickets on the Scribble Showdown website, and next time we plan on touring in the States again, I'll let you know. But for now, thank you everyone who came to a show, unless you live in Brooklyn. Thank you all for watching, and thank you everyone on the Real Good Touring team who babysat us for a month and made the show possible. Touring with you was a blast. And now, I'm going back to sleep on my tour bus coffin, facing the correct way while repressing my urge to poop. And golly, I sure do hope I don't get any nightmares. Right, bunk buddy Ross? Ross?
I haven't slept in 11 days.
All right, James. Are you ready for this? I
was going to say, that's only happening one time.
Down! I'm crazy! Yeah, I'm 25. That's a quarter of a century. And I've been doing YouTube full-time for a nickel of a century. My life's practically over. I'm at a point now where when people recognize me, they'll say, "OMG, James, I've been watching you since the 8th grade." And I'll be like, "OMG, your beard is bigger than mine." So I've been thinking, you know those going through puberty videos your 8th grade science teacher shows you for some reason? The ones that are like, "Hey boys, I'm the puberty platypus, and I'm here to tell you that your body is going through some wonderful changes. You're gonna start growing hair in weird places, and smelling bad, but that's just the wonders of life." And then for the girl one, it's like, "Oh, ladies, you're gonna wanna sit down for this one." Well, I think they need to make a puberty part 2 video that they show to high school seniors and prepare them better for the quote-unquote adult life they're about to face. Schools just give you a piece of paper and a funny hat and send you off into the world expecting you to figure out your intricate and complicated life through what? Trial and error? I want the puberty part 2 video that I'm planning on making to start like this. The puberty platypus will come back on screen and will be like, "Well, kids, you did it. See? Puberty wasn't so bad. For some of you. Unfortunately, dear children, this is only the beginning." And then he'll start talking about all the fun things you can expect in the following years. Like, instead of growing hair in new places, for some of you, your hair is going to start thinning and falling out. And if you're a guy worried about hair loss, then I've got good news. This video is sponsored by Bald People. They're paying me money to tell you to just shave it all. Shave it. Looking good, Rush! You're also going to be perpetually tired. And before you start thinking, "I'm not going to be tired, I'm going to get 8 hours of sleep every night." First of all, no you're not. And second of all, that's not going to help. You will still be tired, and there's no escape. Why do you think adults say, "Ha ha ha, don't talk to me till I've had my coffee"? It's because every adult, from the moment they wake up, is dead tired. And we need stimulants just to function. You're also going to start getting excited about things you used to think were stupid, like furniture shopping. Sometimes you'll go on Zillow and look at the most expensive houses and think, "Oh, that's a nice kitchen backsplash," and then wonder where your youth went. Another thing, 90% of the mail you get is worthless, but the other 10% of mail is very, very important. Like, if you ignore it, your water, power, and Wi-Fi get shut off. Important. Or you'll get mail that's like, "Hey, you owe the government some money, and we know how much money you owe us, but we're not going to tell you, stupid. So you either have to figure that out yourself, or pay another person some money so they can tell you how much money you owe the government." Hey there. I don't want you to be scared of growing up. There's still plenty of pros that come with being older. And also, you can't escape it. You'll get to be independent and make your own decisions. Did your parents never let you get a tattoo? Well, now you can. But I'm going to put it somewhere that I can easily cover it up when I visit them for Christmas. That way it's not weird if I exclusively wear turtlenecks around them. I just like them. Another pro, you won't complain about the food you have at home because you'll only ever buy the food you like and can afford. You're independent now. You can eat cake for breakfast. However, if you do that, your stomach will hurt and you won't be able to move for 8 hours. Okay, at first you'll be able to get by with bagel bites for dinner. That's a standard college-grade meal. But after a couple of years of that abuse, your body will go,
"Yo, do you think you could throw down some, I don't know, fruit every once in a while? Yeah, we gotta make, like, new cells for your developing brain, and we've been making them solely out of bagel bites." It is genuinely upsetting that I have to figure out what I have to eat 3 times a day.
There are some days where I'm hungry, but I'm not craving anything, and I know I have to eat, but I'm looking through my fridge, and I end up eating string cheese and grapes for lunch. On a bagel. I wish I could just unhinge my jaw and eat a month's worth of food like a snake. Do snakes only eat once a month? I don't know, I hate snakes. 50% of my driving destinations is to the grocery store, and the other 50% is drive-thrus. It's all food-based. Oh, actually, sometimes I do have to go to the gas station. Wait, that's just food for my car. I've been trying to eat out less, so I bought boxed frozen orange chicken instead of going to Panda Express. But then I realized, I'm still eating out, I'm just heating up the orange chicken in my own microwave. Some of you might like cooking. I don't. Whenever I cook a meal, I purposely cook way more food than I need so I can get 2 meals out of only cooking one. I would rather eat progressively staler pasta all week than have to cook every day. But even if you like cooking, I know one aspect of it you don't like, cleaning up the mess afterwards. Why do you think the rule, I cooked it, you clean it, exists? And now that you're an adult, you're about to learn, it never stops. Get used to doing the dishes and laundry because as long as you eat and sweat, those are 2 chores you do until the grave. Laundry is such a prevalent chore that I guarantee someone watching this video needs to put the wash into the dryer, but instead they're watching YouTube. Well, go on. Leave. I don't know how I'm going to handle folding dishes and cleaning laundry for the rest of my life. I'm only 25 and already burned out from it. Hey, speaking of burnout, I want to talk about something I just learned recently called having a healthy work-life balance. Some of you might have started working from home this last year. Welcome to the club. You now have no reason to go outside. So take it from a guy who's been working from home for 5 years. Go outside anyway. There's definitely benefits to working from home, like you get to work in your pajamas and... But it can be tough to work and live under the same roof, and I think a lot of young people have this mindset of being on the grind is a good thing, or at least a normal one. While it is important to work hard to achieve your goals, you need to be aware of burnout. And as a content creator who is his own boss, it's very easy to fall into an unhealthy work ethic. If you think your boss is annoying, try having a boss that lives inside your head and will not shut up about working. It could be Saturday and you're hanging out with your friends and your boss in the back of your head will say, "You could be working." There will always be work that needs to be done, you will always feel anxious about not posting, and since you technically live in the office, you could theoretically work well into the early hours of the morning every night. Or morning, I don't know. I want to talk more about burnout and my YouTube journey and how I'm managing it, but that will be for another time because I've been working on it. I'm definitely getting better, I'm more relaxed on the weekends and going to more social settings, vaccinated of course. It's taken me a while to learn the importance of a healthy work-life balance and that it's okay to work on yourself. I'm not sure if you all related to that last part, maybe give it a couple of years. But anyways, growing up is a part of life. Adulthood is something that you all should be looking forward to. You learn and experience so many things, and that's just your early 20s. And before I go, is there anything you want to add, Puberty Platypus? Am I ever going to find something I'm truly passionate about? I drift through every day doing what feels like nothing, seeing all my high school friends getting married and starting families, doing things that they're happy and excited about. It makes me feel even more isolated in my state of confusion and solitude. Who am I? Why don't I know myself anymore? What went wrong?
Bagel bite?